political party, according to Lutz Bachmann, who founded the so-called Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West. The new faction would act as an ally of the other mainstream far-right faction Alternative for Germany. Bachmann told supporters that the new organization would be called the Popular Party for Freedom and Direct Democracy. However, he said he would not seek to lead the party. At one point, Bachmann had seemed to embarrass Pegida supporters when photos emerged of him playing dress-up in a Nazi costume and sporting a Hitler mustache.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan told The Nation on Saturday that his government was working to crush a coup attempt after a night of explosions, air battles, and gunfire across the capital left at least 60 people dead and at least 150 people wounded. Government officials said the coup appeared to have failed as Turkish people took to the streets overnight to confront troops attempting to take over the country. However, the sound of huge blasts, including at least one bomb that hit the parliament complex, continued to ring out in the
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
On the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
This is an interesting time. And just so you can know that there's no lock on crazy. I happen to know for a fact that Angry is listening right now, and he'll go, "Oh yeah, I tried to tell people." Nation of Islam had their Savior's Day sermon in Chicago, and that's where Louis Farrakhan stood up and said, "Trump is the only member who has stood in front of the Jewish community and said, I don't want your money. Anytime a man can say to those who control the politics of America, I don't want your money, that means you can't control me. And they cannot afford to give up control of the presidents of the United States. Not that I'm for Mr. Trump, but I like what I'm looking at," he said. You can bet your ass that Donald Trump won't have any problem at all. There will be no hesitation in disavowing Louis Farrakhan, because Louis Farrakhan scares the pee-pee out of white people. Mm-hmm. Hey, wait a minute. I think I've had a prayer answered.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Check that out. All this, they be looking for stories of black. They be making up stuff, right? We got The Rock playing all kinds of, got The Rock whose son's a snitch. You understand? We got all these made up characters, Fast and Furious. We got phony militants being portrayed on every time you see a movie on Bounce. Look at this new movie now with Oprah Winfrey. What was this one called? This new one coming out? Oh yeah, about the butler. Did you see that one? There's one coming up about the White House butler and how he changed Kennedy's opinion of black people. And if it wasn't for the butler, we wouldn't be free. And they start talking about the historical nature of butlers for black folks. And it says, that being a house nigger, they changed the whole dialogue on Malcolm's analysis of house niggers. Now, this house nigger is the reason why John F. Kennedy was steadfast and LBJ was steadfast in the civil rights was because he humanized the face of black folks. So he served them. And they got Forrest Whitaker playing this, so they got a good actor playing this. And Oprah Winfrey is in this, and this other woman is, I think Oprah Winfrey is the butler's wife. Yeah, this movie's coming out, major production coming out. The house nigga saved us. If it don't be for the house nigga, we don't be here. And in the coming attractions, we were sitting there watching this yesterday, right? In the coming attractions, they got a whole piece on the Black Panther Party. Because one of her kids is a militant and becomes a Panther. And she's talking about all that militancy you're talking about with a Panther in the background. She's in the Black Panther Party office. I don't, God knows where it's at. Talking smack. Say, if all of it wasn't for your father, you wouldn't even be able to do this. And you going to call him an Uncle Tom? Rewrite history. They're doing it with the movie Angela. They rewrite history.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neofascist, and those communities suffering from pro-capitalist, anti-environmental oppression. We're back. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the people of the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com. as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my executive co-producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in Multnomah Nation Territory. We're going to talk about the Nazism that's going down here in Portland in just a moment. But I want to address something because we're going to actually try to stay on schedule here and not linger in studio too much. so I'm going to try to keep the tangents to a minimum. You know, yeah, I'm going to try. Some of you have recently, remember on the 19th of this month, this past week, I did a spot on the Bob Kincaid Show, Head on Radio, headonradio.com. And, you know, we've been on quite often. I mean, the last dispatch was comprised of two separate conversations we had that were put together in one show. You know, Lupe records the broadcast, you know, as they're happening, like a lot of people do. And we usually edit them and put them on the show because the conversations are good. The conversations are open. But, you know, every now and again, you know, something comes up, right? And there's certain questions that are asked, and, you know, folks just don't want to get into certain subjects. Now, you know, the subject of white liberals has been coming up lately. And it's not that it hasn't been an issue. It's just that we got the internet now, right? So you can self-publish. I mean, I self-publish all the time. I'm working on a paper now. It is what it is. So now we can publish our own articles and start and not wait for CNN, you know, and the rest of the mainstream media to catch up, which, as you can see with this Dallas shooting, was because this is kind of how we got into this. All right. So like I said, it was the 19th of this month, and it was a contentious show because, and I hate to say this, but, you know, I'm going to be frank, and I'm not going to play the audio, even though Lupe really, really, really wants me to do this, and if there's a reason to, I will. He's the, and I suppose, what's that? Well, you're saying that we should. Well, okay. Well, see, Lupe wants to play for the simple fact that the Kincaid Show, which has a podcast, which is at headonradio.com, you'll notice that the particular show for the 19th is missing. It's not there. Because I obviously, as I was listening, at some point, he's decided that he's not going to put it out. So, he's decided that he's not going to, you were listening as I was, he's not going to put it out. You know, obviously people were asking about it, right? And he's not going to release it because it was, so disturbing and so upsetting to people and him in particular, I suppose, that, he's not going to put it out. Even though that's probably the most important show we ever did. You understand what I'm saying? You know, if all intents and purposes, that's the most important show we ever did. But he's not going to put it out because, you know, what happened was, even though I wasn't challenging him personally and I wasn't challenging him even directly, but, you know, the old African saying is true, man. You know, when you throw a rock into a crowd of dogs, right, the only one that yelps is the one that gets hit. So, you know, if you think I'm talking about you, then obviously, you know, so if you're talking about white racism to a white person who also happens to be a self, you know, identified liberal. Now, remember, this is not new. We've been talking like this since the late 60s, that white liberals can't be trusted because, you know, they're down with you. To a point. They're down with you to a point. And usually where the breaking line comes is the same way where it comes with those who, you know, like to call themselves middle of the road, like to, you know, see themselves as just regular old white folks, right? Because we're talking about the entire Anglophone world, not the United States. The United States is not the center of the fucking planet. Yeah. I mean, if you listen to this show, I would think you understand that. But see, the whole thing is, the white liberal says that. But does the white liberal really mean it? Now, like I said, we've been talking about this since the late 60s because, you know, a lot of white folks will show up. And in a lot of cases, this still happens because I've been witness to it. And it's happened where, you know, you have people of color that finally, you know, able to get their shit together and get something going. And then white folks show up and then they get angry with the group because they're not allowed to lead it. You know, and like I said, for those who heard the show, you know, in the end, it, you know, he came up with that. But then again, that's a fallback. Well, we shouldn't lead it. But at the same time, respect the fact that I'm here and that that's equal to your input. And that's bullshit. You see, because when we first started talking, you know, the idea was because he brought it up on the show before this, which would be what, the 18th, right? No, I wasn't on that show, and you know, but I was listening. You know, at least to big parts of it, because I'm in and out when I play his thing, because we record it. I listen to it later. But, you know, he was asking about the name of the shooter, because, you know, he was born Gavin Long, or at least that's what his parents registered him as in the United States. And yes, this be factual. It is a colonial name. Gavin is not African, and neither is Long, you know, so... It is what it is. And, you know, he decided, I suppose, after he got out of the military, we don't have no idea what his military experience was like, because according to his family, he didn't talk to anybody when he came back. He didn't express any feelings. He didn't have any conversations. And I know I've spoken to fellas like that, you know, not those who were in doing peacetime. I'm talking about cats that, you know, they asked me, you know, what, from, say, Panama on. You know, fellas I knew that, I knew people who served in Nam, but I was a kid back then. I'm talking about as an adult, you know, being able to rationally, you know, look at the situation. I've known fellas that went off, a couple of Marines ended up in, Panama. And, you know, they came back. I mean, there were losses over there, but, you know, no one I knew had any real losses. You know, they didn't have any, you know, major trauma. They said it was easy because they really weren't fighting any goddamn buddy, right? So, you know, they came back more or less okay. Now, those who, because I understand it was a SEAL team that was like pretty much massacred. I mean, they got left out there. So something went wrong. Bad intel, something. And I'm sure they, you know, the men who worked with them were completely traumatized behind that. But I'm talking about the people I knew. They came back okay. Now, everybody I know, they came back from the Gulf. I'm talking about Desert Storm and this second goddamn adventure. None of them are the fucking same. Their faces are not the same. Their eyes are different. They don't. They're just not the same. And I'm not saying that they walked around, you know, and they're a problem to society or anything. Because none of the people I know that turned out to be. But I mean, they just lost. Their youth was gone. Man. You know, whatever spark that was in them when they left, I never saw it again. So, you know, those who are out here, you know, always beating the drum for war because you've been playing video games or some shit, or really, what's worse, you probably really like violence because you really, really fucking get off on it. You're goddamn insane. And you need to seek professional fucking help. There's something wrong with someone that likes, you know, the idea of combat in any goddamn form, you know, for recreation. I mean, if you have to fight, I mean, you know, I'm kind of like, what's it, fucking, and he was a bastard, though, but General LeMay, who led the Army Air Corps during World War II, I mean, he's like, look, you know, I don't have any patience for this, you know, why we have to fight. He goes, we're in a shooting war, we got to fight. You know, if we don't fight, you know, we're done, right? So, you know, you got to do it, so that's the job. It's a job. You got to do this. You got to get your head into it. So, you know, he was telling them, if I remember the speech correctly, that if they thought they were special, if they had some kind of special hide, they needed to be saved. And if they kept thinking about their wives and all that kind of shit, to, you know, to walk out of his unit. Because he wanted people that were going to be there. Because, you know, that was the thing. So you can't put somebody in that kind of goddamn whirlpool of insanity and then expect them to be normal when they come out. I've never spoken to a vet that was normal coming back. And like I said, you know, who saw combat? You know, motherfuckers who went in peacetime, Air Force, all that kind of shit, the Navy. I mean, they came and went out pretty much the same fucking way. You know, Marines I've known too. You know, they go out, they come out the same fucking way. They didn't have to do anything other than whatever their jobs were, right? But, you know, those that had to survive out in those conditions, man, they didn't come back the fucking same. So we really don't know what the fuck happened to Gavin Long. We don't know what happened to Gavin Long, but obviously, you know, he felt that he was, you know, however he was looking at it, that he deserved better than what he was getting out of his own country. So when he comes back, after probably being shot at and dodging IEDs and whatever the fuck else he was, you know, subjected to over there, like everybody else, and he had to have, you know, had some of his shit together because he became a sergeant. You just don't fucking become a... Wait a minute, was he Army or Marine Corps? I thought he was Marine Corps. You know, was he? So yeah, you know that you don't fucking. Well, even if he was in the army, you don't just become a sergeant and you're a dummy. Who the fuck ever heard of a dummy sergeant or a fucking dummy, you know, CPO? Now you got arrogant sergeants and arrogant fucking CPOs. I mean, yeah, you got some E5 pricks and shit, you know, sure. But it's, in other words, you still got to be able to fucking, that's like saying that a staff sergeant is stupid. I mean, that's bullshit. So, you know, that, something happened to him. I mean, look at the, and he was Muslim. What war was that? Fort what? I want to say Fort Hood, but I don't know. Down in Texas, the psychiatrist, the Muslim psychiatrist that went berserk on base. He's paralyzed now. I mean, his life was totally fucked. He was dealing with these fellows when they came back, right? And they told him that he had to go in country. And his way of dealing with it was to fucking flip out on everybody. You know, I mean, his job was to, you know, get these guys and women, I suppose, you know, ready, you know, able enough to function, you know, back into the meat grinder. And when they told him that his ass had to go, his way of dealing with it was to start shooting his fellow soldiers. So, you know, it's, you know, we need to, and it's not even like, well, we need to be fair to Gavin Long. I don't give a fuck about the being fair thing. Be objective. See, if we were being fair, we'd be talking about one of the fucking cops that he shot. Well, really, we'd be talking about at least two of the cops that he shot. Now, one of them, and I remember saying this, I even said this on the fucking Kid K show, you know, he just got married. And there's nothing negative that has been said about him. You know, there was no bullshit on his Facebook, like, you know, like this other guy. There was no, you know, no far right, no violence bullshit that's been found about him so far. And then the brother officer that was shot 9 days before. I'm not going to read it because Lupe put it up here. But 9 days before, he put a post on Facebook, because it's too long for Twitter. Facebook, saying that, you know, he loves the city and he really... Or was it Baton Rouge? Well, you get my point. We got these two incidents here. But I'm talking about the Gavin Long thing. That he, you know, people were looking at him with disgust and fear and with anger, you know, when he was in uniform. And then when he wasn't in uniform, you know, no one trusted him because everybody knew he was a police officer. People thought that they, you know, obviously that... He might hurt them, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, or worse, right? So, or, you know, or take away their freedom or put them on a fucking cycle where every dime that they get will be going off to paying fines and jail fees. So, you know, it's a goddamn shame that anybody got shot. But I mean, you know, I'm saying this as a black man, you know, fucking for him to express that and then 9 days later for him to be shot by another brother is, I mean, you know, it's heart-wrenching and shocking, but at the other time, it's like, it's a wake-up call in terms of, we've been trailing you that this fucking shit was a problem, and you don't want to deal with it, because what was the whole fucking point of him doing that? It was the same shit that happened up in Seattle with Christopher Monfort, because, you know, nobody wants to talk about that case in Seattle either, or anywhere in Washington State for that matter, which, I mean, Seattle, the Seattle PD, that's right, we haven't been on since this happened, right? For those of you who don't know, the Seattle Police Department Union, their website doesn't exist anymore. Is it the website or just the Twitter and Facebook accounts? Well, I know for a fact that their social media shit, and this was reported in The Stranger from up there, is down. Yeah, I went to look because they didn't know the link was there when I read the article at the time. Because this was sometime like a fortnight ago. And because the police union head, chief, president, whatever the fuck it was, said some shit about Black Lives Matter being a terrorist group. And or being violent or what have you. I don't remember verbatim. I'm sure there's a screenshot out there. If you want to put it on the screen, you can if you feel like it. You know what, fuck it, don't even bother. It doesn't matter because the motherfucker, the shit isn't even up there anymore. Because it was so goddamn heinous. They took it down because what was it? They said at first that they took the initial post down because he's done this before. He's made racist statements before, insensitive statements before, but it was so many they just decided to take everything fucking down. They just took it all down. So, you know, are we going to look at what's really fucking going on? So, because you got a lot of black folks right now, obviously online, and I've heard chit chat in the street, you know, where motherfuckers are saying, well, he got one, right? Not saying that he got a cop, so I'm out that he got a Nazi, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, that's not a good goddamn thing. You know, one of the ways that the police could be motherfucking dealing with this shit is do a real goddamn investigation like the military has done, or at least attempted to fucking do, because you never really know what an officer or a soldier is really fucking telling you. Just like when motherfuckers go to the doctor, they tell the doctor what the fuck they gonna tell them, you know what I'm saying? You know, how many people have you had unprotected sex with this year? Oh, I don't know. You know, and then you decide, should you tell them, you know, half or three quarters of what the fuck you really did? You know, it's like, come on. You know this. You know this. When somebody wants Valium, they tell the doctor whatever the fuck they want, they think the doctor wants to hear. So, you know, we all do this. So when it comes to fucking racism in law enforcement, racism in the military, racism in the medical profession, you know, I have the goddamn reports and anybody can go look for these things. Two separate university fucking studies, one of them a medical university, showed that, you know, doctors and nurses and other attendants bring their racial prejudices to work. And that this is one reason why black folks are misgoddamn diagnosed, mis-motherfucking medicated, not under-medicated, over-medicated in some goddamn cases, you know, with shit that they don't need, right? Well, let me see so I can get this straight. Over-medicated with, you know, substances that they don't need, and under-medicated with what they need. Because for one of the goddamn things was like a third of the respondents, however many it was. And remember, these are all educated motherfucking people within their first or second year of medical school. And I probably should say that it was in the South, but I don't think it would be too much different anyplace else, because the majority of these students, I believe, were from out of state. So they could have come from anywhere. And I don't remember seeing that data, if that was even collated, which I probably was, but I don't remember reading that. And I have both of them, so I should look. But in any case, they didn't believe that black people feel pain at the same goddamn rate as Caucasians. These are educated white folks. You understand what I'm saying? Educated Asians. You understand what I'm saying? Educated hoppers. Right? Or is Eurasian still not involved? We can't use that anymore, right? Right? And some white Latinos or Hispanics, right? They don't believe that black people feel pain. So, you know, they under-medicate in terms of the pain medication, which means you suffer and probably think about committing suicide and shit because the pain is so goddamn bad. Why am I saying that? Why am I going to that extreme? Because I was in a hospital room visiting somebody else, listening to someone saying, basically, let me die because I was in so much pain. And everybody in there who gave a shit, I'm talking about the other patients now and some of their family members, trying to argue on behalf of this person, saying that she's been asking for pain medication and you don't want to give it to her. Okay, and in the case of that, if I remember correctly, there was a family member of somebody else that was in the room, because it was like five women in this room, and she did this lady's insurance had run out, and I don't think she had much family or family that wasn't really checking on. We all know how that is. So, I mean, she said, I want to die, because she couldn't get any relief from what was up. They were not checking on her. They were not monitoring her. And yes, I was visiting a white family and that woman was black. Yes. And I have to say that some of those white people in there did argue for her, and all of the patients did, because they were all in the same boat. They were all in the same room and they were, you know, watching her suffer like this, right? But I'm going to tell you, man, the fucking staff didn't hop to for her. But they did certainly fucking, you know, jump around when they needed to, when they were buzzed and all that bullshit for the white people, including the person I was visiting. Yes. Yes. I witnessed that. And, you know, a lot of us witness bullshit like this every fucking day. But see, here's where white liberals come in, because they will say, because this has happened to me too many goddamn times.
All right.
That it's not as bad as I'm saying it is. Or, why are you so angry? Or, I do what I can do, and you're taking it all out on me. You know, but like I, you know, if I sit up and say, well, you know, black racism is bad, and, you know, hating white people is bad, and you shouldn't hate white people, and I, you know, name black folks and point to them, or, you know, the minister, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is an anti-Semite, he's a Jew hater, Hymetown, Reverend Jackson, we should never forgive him for that, because that was a terrible fucking thing to do. You know, Azalea Banks is a total bitch. I mean, she is, but see, I don't like her for my reasons, not for your reasons. See what I'm saying? You know, I don't, you know, support Barack Obama. I really respect Sister Michelle, but I do not respect her husband as President of the United States for the simple fact that he's not doing anything that in terms of, you know, fucking trying to stop the madness. And what I mean by that is, I did not expect him to come into the White House to, you know, be the president of Black America. I expected him to support everybody. But that also means supporting Black people, too. At some fucking point in time, you know, we earn our goddamn keep here. We motherfucking go to work and pay our goddamn taxes and serve in the motherfucking military, too, like Gavin Law. You understand? To be told by a cop, well, I don't know why I shot you, because that's what happened to the brother who was shot in Florida while, you know, a professional. So we've had a professional dietitian for a Montessori school murked in front of his common law wife and their daughter. And then who legally had a gun and told this motherfucking nervous ass punk fucking cop that he had a gun, and he got blasted anyway and was about to be shot again. That officer was about to light up the whole goddamn car. Okay. And then, you know, how did they deal with it? They cuffed the wife. Okay. You know, basically intimidate and threaten the fuck out of her, you know. Just like this cat. He's shot in the leg while he's lying down with his hands up. And they cuff him any goddamn way. And then come up with a, you know, and the special needs person in which he was trying to protect, right? And then now the police union down there, this is the same Florida now, the state of Florida, where they use black men. They use their mugshots for fucking target practice. Go look at MSNBC. CNN and CBS.com if you think I'm fucking lying. If you think I'm lying, fucking fact check me. Go look it the fuck up. And in Vancouver, they use goddamn, and Toronto, they use motherfucking First Nations women for target practice. Look it the fuck up. Alright? They shot this man up. He's a fucking professional. And yeah, I'm saying that. He was a goddamn professional. He was a fucking technician, okay? Who was trying to take care of a special needs goddamn person at risk, risking his own fucking life to do it. Well, see, now the double down cop down is, or the double down cop out, I should say, is that, the officer was trying to fire at the special needs person to protect the cat that got shot. No, I don't remember his name. I should know. But, I mean, I can't remember them all. You know, it's just so goddamn many. Charles Kinsey. Mr. Charles Kinsey. Brother Charles Kinsey. So, you know, they're saying now that their backup now is that we meant to shoot the autistic man with the toy fire truck. Not the big black guy, Charles Kinsey, who was lying on the ground with his arms up. We were trying to actually shoot the special needs person to protect Charles Kinsey. Do you understand this now? I mean, this happened a few months ago, or several months ago, where three black girls had stolen a car. Now, I'm not going to sit here and defend them stealing a motherfucking car, and I'm not excusing them stealing fucking cars. Especially since they did this several times before. I mean, really, these chicks were on a fucking short road to a criminal life. You know, I mean, that's real. Now, we need to discuss how they got so fucked up like that, what the fuck they were getting out of this kind of shit. But regardless, they stole the motherfucking car, and, you know, which is stupid today. And it was stupid any goddamn way. Shouldn't steal people's shit. But they stole the motherfucking car, right? So they're joyriding, and they were being chased by the police, and ended up running into a pond or something. A pond, a lake, whatever the fuck it was. Now, here's the thing. I actually could have fucking dealt with these three girls being chased by the police, because this happened in the evening. This video now. Right? The family fought for the fucking video to come out. Whenever this happened. But I just got wind of this two, maybe 3 months ago. And I could have dealt with, they were chasing them. It's that night. They inadvertently drove into a body of water, and they weren't able to retreat. I could live with that. But see, what they're asking me to do is to sit and be okay with the fact that the police chief said that his officers were heroes because they went down into the water and tried to save the girls. Well, we know that's a goddamn lie, because the dash cam that they finally motherfucking released showed these cops standing over there with their hands on their hips, listening to these girls scream out for help. They were listening to them drown, standing around, talking about, yeah, they're done. They're done.
Then there's the morning after.
Again, don't believe me. Go look. Go to your Google. Three black girls drown.
And she's gone.
Cop says, you know, a police chief says that they're heroes and that they tried to save them, that they took off their gun belts and all the other shit and went down into the water to try to save them. And I would respect them if that's what they did. But that's not what they did. That's not what they did. They stood there and allowed those girls to drown. There was no attempt at a rescue. This is what Gavin Long came back to. Now, I had mentioned Christopher Monfort and went on a tangent earlier, because up in Seattle, he attacked police officers in at least two attacks. And I'm actually surprised that he lived to see fucking trial, but he was shot in the neck and paralyzed from the neck down. Kind of like, well, exactly like the cat in Fort Hood. Paralyzed from the fucking neck down, right? And they found American flags and some makeshift IEDs. Well, I guess they're all makeshift anyway, right? IED. All of this bullshit. And then they did the background check on this cat. And what they find out was that he was a graduate of the police academy. Well, not the police academy, but the police college course down in California. You know, the 2-year course that you need to take in law enforcement before you can become a working police officer. You know, the same program that Steven Seagal went through, you know, before he got kicked out of different jurisdictions and shit for battering women down there in the South. But in Louisiana last time, that's where that Steven Seagal lawman bullshit was from, right? Then he showed up with Sheriff Joe Pyle, where they were executing search papers and shit. I don't know what the fuck. But anyway, he's taking people in because he was or is a reserve cop. You know, I don't fucking know. He's a clown. You know, yeah, he's a martial artist, and yeah, he could put me through a fucking wall. But, you know, he's a fucking clown. You know, and now he's running around with Putin. You know, I know he's Jewish from Orange County, fucking California. Yeah, that's all the fuck I know about him. I was told that by people from Orange County, California, who claimed that they knew his family. Again, I'm not going to knock his martial arts credentials, because he is what the fuck he is. But he's also damn near 7 feet, and just about any technique he's going to put on the average person is going to work. Right? So, you know, unless you really catch him in the kneecaps or some kind of shit wrong, and his balance is off, you know, I mean, you're really not going to be able to do too much to him. And then the last time I saw him on Russian television, he looked like he was fucking 18 stone. So, you know, whatever, man. You know, I mean, his face and neck and shit, he didn't really have much of a neck the last time I saw him. So it's like, I'm not even... Oh, what did he say, Luke? Oh, yeah. He was talking about how much he loves Russia on Russian TV, because he did an Aikido exposition there. Very dramatic, you know. It's just, I don't know, and his hair... I don't fucking know. I mean, ever since somebody told me that he didn't know how to use a compass when he was with some people who were in the special forces community. I mean, these are all retired men. And they were just on an outing or something. I believe they were actually going fishing. And somebody asked him to give them a bearing. Him to give them a bearing. And that he couldn't use a compass. So, no. I can't take him seriously. I mean, evidently, like Gavin Long and like Mika X Johnson, Steven Seagal, who has never served in the military, there's no evidence of that. He claims to have been in Tibet with the agency. You can figure out which agency I'm talking about. You know, the one that Rain Simmons said that he belonged to. And wasn't he just sentenced to for lying about that shit? And you notice that Fox News has not said a goddamn thing about Rain Simmons being a motherfucking liar. He was their intelligence expert. He was up there saying that Black Lives Matter, well, if it wasn't Black Lives Matter per se, it's like, you know, anything that had to do with dealing with police brutality, that these people were no good, blah, 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 blah. Lying son of a bitch. I mean, how do you figure you're going to get away with a goddamn lie like that anyway? Do they not think that the CIA keeps records, employee fucking records? You know, I mean, these motherfuckers watch these goddamn movies and don't have a fucking clue. Well, evidently, that's how they were able to get away with this bullshit. Because, what did they say, Lou? Yeah, because the people who watch Fox, they were watching 24 and all that other type of crap. Well, that's another thing. I mean, one of the reasons that, you know, I've been saying this. One of the fucking reasons that, a lot of torture has been not reported, but, and I'm not even going to say that this is specifically why it's going down. I mean, what happened in Abu Ghraib went down, I think, before 24, for example, came on the air. But what I'm trying to get to is, you know, you got a lot of wannabe Jack Bauers out here. And, you know, I know people, man. If motherfuckers think I just run around with liberals and shit, it's like I don't. I'm surrounded by motherfucking conservatives. You know, I keep trying to explain that. You know, and motherfuckers don't... I guess they don't want to believe it. They don't want to accept it. You know, they would rather believe that, you know, Portland, Oregon is just this bastion of liberalism. I mean, it is. But you got... Unless it's just my particular fucking neighborhood and where I have to, you know, go and do business. I'm surrounded by conservatives. And I'm telling you, when you look at what happened with Gavin Long, I mean, it's no different than white supremacists. It's no different. You know, I mean, and that was what, when I first, I said, I know I'm going around here, but, you know, roll with me. When I got on the Kincaid show, we were going to talk, because he talked about it, and talked about us talking about it the night before. So I came on, and was going to talk about this Washita Nation, or however the fuck they pronounce it. I mean, I've heard of it before. It's on the internet. And do they have physical meetings and all that? Yeah, they get together. I mean, they got their little groups, and it's an ad hoc thing. And it is part of that sovereign citizenship. But as I also pointed out in Efforts for Fascism and in the mismeasures of revisionist motherfucking Afrocentrism and bullshit, these, you know, black fascists, the black hardcore sovereign citizen movement, which, again, is hooked up to the revisionist, you know, Afrocentric thing. It's a black power movement, which, again, you know, when black power came up, it was in reference or in response or in referential response, I should say, maybe, to white power, right? White power kept kicking our goddamn ass since Reconstruction. Well, since we've been here through Reconstruction up through what was supposed to be the Civil Rights period, right? So here we're supposed to be, you know, dealing with what are supposed to be our rights, and here's the fucking Klan back stronger than it had been for decades in 66, 68, right? 72, 75. That shit never went away. So here you have the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Here you have the American Indian Movement. Here you have the Brown Berets, right? And to a, you know, lesser or greater extent, depending on how far you want to extend the radicalism. And I'm saying that within the true sense of it. Radical comes from radic, from the Latin. It means to get to the root. A real radical is trying to get to the root of something. you know, we throw a lot of terms around that, you know, it's like with white supremacy. I mean, you hear a lot of black Afrocentrists talk about, well, white supremacy this, white supremacy that, everything to them is white supremacy. And it's gotten to the point where they've just thrown it around now. It doesn't make any sense. When you look at what Gavin Long was talking about, there was a whole lot of repetitive, everything is white supremacy, right? Everything is white supremacy. I talked about it on a past show. You know, a lot of these Hotep motherfuckers don't want to believe now. They got some new idea that black women didn't have menstrual cycles in Africa until Europeans showed up with bad food. Now, of course, all of this is ludicrous, you know, on its face, but you got people who are holding on to a belief in deity. Is there any proof for this? How many billions of dollars, lira, you know, pesos, motherfucking euros, you know, are being spent on Bibles and other, you know, Catholic and Christian paraphernalia, Protestant paraphernalia, Jewish paraphernalia, right? Islamic Muslim paraphernalia. When, you know, everybody's talking about the source and truth and all that, but we got to have these special books and you got to have these special anointments and people want to have their tokens and their medals and their souvenirs when they go to the, you know, go to the Lourdes or something. You know, I mean, people believe in bullshit that's bullshit. You know, faith, hope, whatever the fuck. I mean, you know, they got their various reasons. But see, Gary, you know, I was going to say Gary, no, Gavin Long, right? In a way, well, I mean, well, not in a way. It's just, and it's not exactly a flip side, but they complement each other. You know, Dylan Roof, who was a white dude who had no motherfucking real reason to have the attitudes that he had in a supposedly enlightened South, was inspired mostly by the motherfucking internet. But what really was going on inside, he didn't feel very much. You look at his goddamn little angry, fucking twisted, snarling fucking face. You know, this little son of a bitch didn't fucking like himself, and obviously didn't like anybody else either. But see, he was so self-hating. You know, like Charles Whitmore. You know, I'm going to get mad with myself and go up on the fucking, you know, watchtower and start hurting people I don't know. You know, I mean, that was what, 60? I don't remember. I was big. But, you know, I mean, that should have told people what the fuck is going on here. And, you know, in almost all of these mass shootings have been white men who were conservative, who felt that they had a loss of power. They don't have control over women. I've written about this. Look at, well, any number of my released papers. You can go to aboriginalwriter.wordpress.com. They're all anti-fascist. Pick one. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're there. And I've talked about motherfuckers like Eric Rudolph, who was attacking abortion centers, Army of God terrorists, right? Yeah, you notice they're not going after the Army of God after Robert Deere, after John Houser. They all claimed Army of God. But, you know, they're a terrorist organization. They got a motherfucking website. They're on Wikipedia, but they're not going after them. The KKK is a fucking terrorist organization. Has been. President Grant was the only goddamn Republican who ever went after him. And even then, you know, they didn't let him do what the fuck he really wanted to do. You know, there's an anti-Klan act on the fucking books. But they got websites and television shows. And now, before we came in here, Lupe was telling me that Dr. David Duke, I guess he's back from Slovenia or wherever the fuck he was living. Because he was all through Europe and getting kicked out of Estonia and wherever the fuck else. And, what is that? Yeah, Trump's wife is from Slovenia. Yeah, I know. You know, they don't like immigrants, but they like her. He's anti-immigrant, but he can't seem to marry an American woman. You know, he's a hypocrite like they are. And yeah, I'm going on a bunch of tangents, but what I'm trying to say is, you know, Gavin Long, when you look at, because, you know, I mean, was there evidence of any of this, Lupe? Have you seen of him being like this before he left? I'm not hearing anything like that. It seems that he hooked up with a lot of this since he's been back. Since he's been back. You know, did he pick up bits and pieces of this in the military? Well, it's hard to say that he would pick up bits and pieces of this in the military because, I mean, there seems to be more white supremacy running around in the goddamn military. I mean, you can go on YouTube and find soldiers teaching Iraqis how to Sig Heil and shit. You know, and a black soldier sitting there just kind of like, you know, looking at the sky because what is he going to do? You know, what is he going to do? He can't do anything. And the Iraqi doesn't know what the fuck is going on. You know, I mean, this is the same thing that happened with Dr. Grober. I mean, he went through Syria and Iraq and what have you and introduced fascism to them because they didn't have a beef with Jews the way Europeans have a beef with Jews. Arabs were living next door to Jews. They were sharing bread. They were sharing lamb. They were sharing cigarettes, right? In Europe, Jews were being chased. Jews were being murdered. Jews were being shoved into gas chambers and ovens. You know, but I bet you any amount of goddamn money, which is what we would have been talking about, you know, if we were able to get to the motherfucking subject. You know, remember, it's Kincaid's show. I let him lead it, right? So, what I was going to bring up was, I bet you any amount of money. If you had asked Gavin Long before he went into this action, or anybody or anything that he associated himself with online, because we don't know how if he ever hooked up with any of these people. You know, like Mika Johnson met with Professor Griff, right? Now, Professor Griff, I don't agree with probably 88% of what he says. But as far as I know, he's not an extremist. But I know they were trying to pin some of this on him because he met Michael Johnson. I mean, it doesn't look good, but what the fuck? How many motherfuckers met Ron Paul? You know, how many different Nazis has Ron Paul, Don Black, Bill White, you know? He's got a black and white problem. I mean, I wrote that piece and it just happened to disappear on the internet. That Ron Paul has a black and white problem. You know, he's got two different fucking Nazis who are vying for his attention and shit. Because they thought that last go round, that, you know, they were going to have the chance that they got with Trump now. And don't think that Gavin Long didn't see this. Yeah, he saw this. But what I was trying to get to was earlier is that I was talking about Holocaust revisionism, right? Or Holocaust denial. I bet you any amount of money, if you had spoken to Gavin Long before he did his action, that he didn't believe that the Holocaust happened. And I bet you any amount of money that he would tell you that the Jews are, that black people are the real Jews and that the Jews in Israel and in Europe are imposter Jews, right? You know, it's all of this crazy ass rhetoric. And again, a few reporters are starting to say something about this in terms of, well, you know, they've picked up a lot of this stuff from white supremacy, but I've been saying this shit for damn near 20 years and writing it for about 12. They've always picked up their shit from fucking white supremacists, and you can't tell them that that's where they're getting their information. You know, they get it from the net. They don't know who these authors are. They don't know how to do research. So they come to conclusions that don't really conclude. So, you know, so part of what I'm saying is, besides the fact that we now know, because Democracy Now! Reported this, Gavin Long was on all kinds of goddamn antidepressants and possibly an antipsychotic. I mean, he wasn't wrapped too motherfucking tight. And then you have Lorne Ahrens, who, is that how you pronounce his name? Ahrens or Ahrens? Our hands. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. His thing. Now he made it. He actually survived surgery, and then something happened. So there were some complications, and he didn't make it. I don't know what sort of damage he had. I don't know anything like that with the three of the victims. But and that's something else I want to point out. Now, for all these motherfucking white guys that keep talking shit, you know, they had their chance. They had their chance to prove their shit in Texas. In gun-toting, open carry Texas. Now, there was a bunch of open carry motherfuckers there with assault rifles and sidearms. And when these officers were attacked, they ran in the other fucking direction. Only police engaged with him before they finally got rid of him with a fucking drone, right? So that's the second black man. Christopher Dorner was the first. And then, they used an incendiary device against him, and then they sent a drone in after this motherfucker. But they sent the drone after Dorner. The drone just didn't get it. When they got him cornered, that's when they used the incendiary device, and then the audio came out there too. They said, let him burn. So we knew he wasn't going to see trial, and the black police chief down there didn't want to, he was like Sheriff Clark, I guess. He wanted to make sure this cat didn't see trial either. You know, I mean, I thought the whole point of the justice system was that a motherfucker could go to trial. They keep bringing the white guys to trial, unless they don't give them a choice. You know, Gerard Amanda Miller didn't give anybody a choice. JT Reddy didn't give anybody a choice. Eric Frein didn't give that officer he murdered a choice. But you notice they're not going after the white guys, right? So now this happened. So, you know, they got to do something about black people now, because, you know, there's pushback. Even though both these people, if they were white, they would be identified as two nutcases who flipped out. Both of them probably, to some degree, suffered from PTSD. But with Mika Johnson, he obviously has a problem. He had a problem with women, right? Probably had a problem with self-control. And the Army said, okay, we got to get rid of this motherfucker because he's a liability. And he decided, well, if I can't soldier over there, I'll soldier over here. Because I've said this before, and I know nobody's listening, but I'm going to say it again because it's important. You know, there's a whole lot of motherfucking people, you know, on the white extremist end and the black extremist end who are failed cops, meaning they couldn't even get into the fucking academy. They couldn't pass the psych, which is what usually it is. They can't pass the psychological. I mean, I knew one motherfucker, he couldn't pass the written test for the fucking police department in Philly 3 times. But of course, he didn't blame himself. He blamed everybody else. Right? He was a white guy. You know, he blamed everybody. You know, quotas, racial quotas against him. You know, he blamed everybody. And then he tried some other civil service positions, but I had heard that he, and I already knew he was a bigot, but I had heard he had become a white supremacist because he figured if I can't soldier one way, I soldier the other. And the last time I knew him, he was a bouncer. So you can imagine what kind of damage he was doing. And with, you know, black men, it's the same goddamn thing. With Latinos, fuck yeah, it's the same goddamn thing. You know, you got a lot of people who want to be in positions where they can push their weight around. They want to be in positions where they can hurt somebody and get away with it. You hear football players talk about this all the time. I'm playing football. I'm in the NFL because I can hit someone in this league. So, you know, you got people who are bouncers because they want to fuck people up. They're bullies. They're already big. You know what I'm saying? You know, they get, you know, the god status. You know, you get women. You do get women when you're a bouncer. Yeah, you get women. And, you know, it's just bullshit. You get to play tough guy. That's really all it's about. You know, a doorman and a bouncer to me are not the same thing. A doorman prevents trouble when he sees it brewing. Or now I should say, when he or she sees it brewing. I've seen some excellent fucking door work from some women out here. You know, they talk to people. They handle the situation differently. And if it needs to get physical, they do what they need to do. But they talk to people. See, a lot of the males, the testosterone is flowing in both ways and nobody's listening to any goddamn buddy, right? So here we got Gavin Long, Mika Johnson. Now, anyone that says that I'm condoning this shit, fuck you. Okay, fuck you in advance, because that's a goddamn lie. I'm not condoning no goddamn violence. I'm against violence. See, one of the reasons I, you know, went on the Kincaid show, you know, for the most part was I thought it was a good thing. He's coming out of Appalachia. I'm coming out of here. But I'm coming, you know, out of the black experience here, the black native experience here, right? But, you know, I have to say this, you know, because he's not going to put the show up and all this kind of shit. And there's no discussion about what happened, even though that's the most important goddamn discussion we ever had. And yeah, it got contentious. And I'm going to say this. It got contentious because, you know, Brother Bob decided to do what most white liberals do. Well, you're talking about me. And it's like, I'm not talking about you. You know, so if I talk about hypocrisy amongst white liberals, I'm talking about you, and then, you know, they do what they usually do. They get defensive and start talking about, well, I did this and I did that. Well, okay. And I acknowledge the fact that he has done, you know, just like I acknowledge a whole lot of other goddamn people, but I'm not going to motherfucking diminish my goddamn shit because you came in from the outside and did something decent. Because see, the bottom line is you're supposed to fucking do something. You're in the position here that has the fucking power. You're a Caucasian in a white racist fucking society. So when you step out of your comfort zone to do something, it's because you have a fucking responsibility and an obligation if you consider yourself to be a decent person to do something. Yes, I'm obligated to say thank you, and I'm obligated to fucking always recognize and be grateful for what the fuck happened. But I'm not supposed to kiss your goddamn ass now for the rest of my fucking life because of that. And see, and where I'm coming from with this is he did something that someone did several years ago to me here in Portland. When I had just moved to my new place, we had I don't want to call it, well, it wasn't an open house, but we were trying to, you know, warm up our place, me and Ms. Angry Indian, and we had over some of our new neighbors and some of our pals. And I got into it with somebody about racism, you know, making the same usual white liberal thing that I'm being angry, that things aren't as bad, and that basically, you know, the racism is continuing because I'm still angry, because I won't let it go, even though police brutality is happening. You know, it was increasing. It was in the news damn near on a weekly fucking basis, but it wasn't like an everyday fucking situation, right? It was, you know, cases that were coming up that had been ignored. So then, you know, people started, you know, filming, and it became more apparent what's going on. Well, this woman denied this completely and was basically making the argument that I was exaggerating white racism for sympathy, for pity, because I didn't really want to work and all this type of shit. And when we, you know, continued on this, and then I got her down to the point where it's like, okay, really, what is the real motherfucking problem? And then what the problem was, her motherfucking status. Because it started coming up, well, what happens to me? And I'm like, what do you mean what happens to you? If, what do you mean? If racism ends, what do you mean what happens to you? What the fuck are you talking about? It's happened to me before, but see, here's what happened next. So then she brings up that I had no real right to complain, and I should just move on and just accept the fact that some people are racist, right? And said that, and this is what got me, because white liberals tend to do this. And Kincaid did this too. I have to be honest about this. I have to call this, all right? She brings up her special needs sister. Now, this woman is in my age group. She brings up her special needs sisters. So I assume at that point she might have been in her, from what I remember, in her mid to late 30s, or maybe late 30s. Okay, I have sympathy. What makes you think that I don't? Well, what the fuck does a special needs person have to do with the systemic racism that I'm facing as a black person and as an indigenous person, and as I ended up having to bring up on the fucking KK show because I'm being forced to now by circumstance? As a mixed person, because I'm not welcome in the black community completely. I'm not welcome in the native community completely. I'm part Jewish, but you think I can walk into a fucking, you know, any kibbutz and be like, hey, everybody, shalom? No, I can't do that. I can't run up on reservations and go, hey, everybody, what's going on? I don't know anybody in that community, right? You know, just can't do that. And yeah, I grew up in the fucking ghetto, but do you think I was accepted in the goddamn ghetto? Most of the reason I have scars and lumps and shit is because the black people decided to kick my ass, right? I wasn't one of them. You know, my brothers and sisters, we weren't one of them. We were mixed. And you know, the Puerto Ricanos I grew up with, well, they were cool until they realized I didn't speak Spanish, and then I had a problem with them. You know, I mean, it's Animal Farm. It's George Orwell's Animal Farm, 24 hours a day, all the way around the bubble. All the time. And it always has been. But see, but we're not going to talk about any of this shit. We're going to pretend that, you know, things are whatever. Now, what I'm saying is, a lot of white liberals, when you know, corner them about the hypocrisy, about not that individual that you're talking to, but, you know, the milieu. You know, when somebody who tells me they're white, and, well, I already see that they're white, obviously, and that they're liberal, and they have sympathy, and this, that, and the other, and they're telling me not to be upset when people are being shot with their hands up, lying on the fucking ground, trying to protect a special needs person. You know, you can get the fuck out of my face. You can miss me with that shit. And see, in this particular person, you know, to diffuse the fact that she was a fucking bigot and got called out and proven that she was a bigot by her own fucking statements in this argument, she drops down to a personal and brings up her sister, who was obviously, you know, somewhat marginalized by society because of her condition. But the bottom fucking line about it is, that's not what we're talking about. And yes, both of us receive oppression, for goddamn sure. And I can talk about the fucking oppression of special needs in this goddamn country, because they use eugenics against them and us at the same fucking time. And see, and if we had continued that discussion, I could have gone on with her about that bullshit. But don't fucking tell me that that bullshit is the same. And of course, she started crying, you know. And now I'm totally mean for calling her out on her goddamn hypocrisy. Because what it really comes down to is, I'm white, and, you know, I'm going to maintain my motherfucking privilege no matter what. You know, you can have your freedom, but not at the extent of my motherfucking privilege. And I will dictate to you, and I will define for you your motherfucking struggle. And I will dictate and I will define whether or not you have a right to be angry. And I will dictate and define how you protest. And I will dictate and define how the motherfuck you fight this, if you fight it at all. So here, that's why the idea of marching and all that kind of shit, they like that. Because white people don't get hurt. But see, if I went and led a march that got violent against a group of black racists, like say, and I am, because they are bigoted. The Nation of Islam, this Washita Nation or whatever the fuck, right? Who I know is just a loose federation, but let's imagine they got some kind of a fucking compound or whatever. And if I got like a group of fucking, and I'm not even talking about the Sheriff Clarks, right? Let's say I got a group of so-called quote-unquote liberal mainstream, did this whole American accent, you know, black people, you know, these young black people, and I took them and we went to the compound and we went and we had our signs and we told them that we would physically stop them from hurting white people. I would get pats on the back like a motherfucker. I would be told about how good I am, about how I'm the right person and this, that, and the other. They said the same shit about Obama, that he was the right one at the right time. Right? Because, you know, he had a white mother and a black father who was from Africa, which means that he doesn't have the same slavery experience. He doesn't have the same fucking scars of the whip and shit throughout his goddamn family like the rest of us. So he's not going to be talking about that old plantation shit. He's going to be talking about what's good for America. They said it at the time, but nobody wants to do a rewind. They said at the time, Barack Obama is the right one. He's the right person because he doesn't come with that nigga baggage. Now, see, my whole thing about like Kincaid is I wasn't even talking about him. And I wasn't even talking about anybody that listens to that show, because obviously, if they're part of that motherfucking program, they're not out of here burning crosses. But how many times do I have to acknowledge that white people are out here? I say it all the fucking time. I say it all the fucking time, but to point out that some white fucking liberals, if not the majority of white liberals, don't really mean the shit that they say, and then you bring up your son being hurt and shit because he stood up to racism, and then accuse me of playing dirty pool? No, see, you can't get any dirtier pool than that, to tell me that your motherfucking experiences as a white person supersede mine as a victim of white racism. No. See, you know, what I just gave, what I just said is true. Now, if I get a bunch of fucking black liberal progressive types that like white people, a bunch of Uncle Toms, just like my goddamn self, and we go challenge some, black far-right neoconservative group, you know, yeah, I'll probably lose my goddamn, life, man. And, you know, they'll make a statue and shit and talk about how, you know, I stood up, you know, for what was right. But on the other hand, how many white people are willing to fight white people over this situation? How many white people are willing to fight white people over black rights, black human rights, black civil rights? How many white people are willing to fight other white people over native rights, human rights, territorial rights, civil rights? See, if you're not willing to challenge white people, and I'm talking about even the people who are fucking standing right next to you who are hypocritical, if you're not willing to challenge them and all you're going to talk about is what they did, who gives a fuck after a while? Who gives a fuck after a while? I mean, Dylan Noble was a white kid who was murked by these cops not too long ago. I mean, black people, Black Lives Matter is talking more about him than the white people. You know, the white folks that are up here screaming all the fucking time about how much we hate them, they're not talking about Dylan Noble. We are. They're not talking about that young man. We are. White liberals are not talking about Dylan Noble. We are. See? You know, and like I said, you know, I have no ill will towards him, but, you know, it's the same thing that happened with the Mike Malloy show, because he used to answer my emails. We used to be on okay terms, but you know, I questioned him because he had an Australian that called him one time. Some of you who listened to the show might remember Blue, and you know, some of you I've asked you turned on to both Malloy and Kincaid because you didn't know about either of these programs. And Blue said, you know, your country's off the fucking rails. And Malloy got defensive and didn't want to hear it. And basically, Flacco, we got the audio. And basically, flat out said, you don't have a right to criticize my country. You're not from here. Well, then, fuck, that's no different than goddamn Donald Trump, is it? How's that any different than Donald Trump? To say you don't have a right to criticize my... That's the whole reason the U.S. is in the position it's in, because it doesn't fucking take criticism from any goddamn button. It doesn't criticize itself. It's good for criticizing China about human rights, even though the United States has more than 25% of the goddamn world's population motherfucking locked up for profit. But he doesn't want to hear any criticism about that. You know, 100, no, was it 18? The last time we looked, right, Lupe? 811 people died since Sandra Bland was killed. And I'm saying it like that. Killed in the motherfucking joint. And have you heard? It came out today. One officer has already admitted that he falsified information on the report of Sandra Bland's intake. All right. And to date, there might be some more, but to date, 811 people have died in custody. Most of them, you know, black. Most of them within 3 days of being arrested. So, I mean, you know, what the fuck? And how many people have been killed so far? How many hundred? 1, 2, 3, 400? You know, what would it be before the year's out? What would it be before November? And like I said, you know, this officer that was a neo-Nazi, I mean, if you notice, only Jesse Benn from the Huffington Post has written about this. Nobody else is discussing this. It's not being talked about anywhere. You know, I mean, you got some blogs that are saying something, and two white supremacist blogs have already claimed this man as his own. But, you know, MSNBC, CNN, CBS... just the Huffington Post. They're the only ones that had the courage to do it. And much respect to Jesse Benn for doing so, because he's catching heat because of this, and he probably will. And, you know, I'm sorry that that's going to happen to him, but I give him total credit for having the fucking courage to report on that. Now, of course, people are, you know, saying, well, you're trying to demonize this officer. Well, what the fuck happens to black men and women every time they run into the police and this shit ends up on the news? The first thing they do is look for some kind of a gang connection, you know, some type of criminal connection. And if they can't find one, they'll make up one. Here we have someone who is a legitimate goddamn neo-Nazi slash white supremacist slash Odinist. And the mainstream media doesn't see fit to say anything, to do anything. And again, it's not that Bob Kincaid and the people over there are not conscious of this. Yeah, they're aware of it. But see, it's easy to talk about racist white people. You know, is it easy to talk about racist liberal people? Because liberals are not the same as progressives. See, a liberal will hear a Nazi and say, well, you have a point. Progressives like, you don't have a motherfucking point. You know, after the Holocaust, fuck no, you don't have a goddamn point. You have no point at all. You have no fucking credibility, period. You know, same thing with the Klan. Credibility, what? After all the terrorism? You know, four little girls? What the fuck are you talking about? Mega Evers? Fuck you. Right? So, you know, it's easy to point to the beer-bellied, you know, I got a gun, I'm a sexual, and sit and say, yeah, well, he's the bigot, you know, and point to their hypocrisy. But it's always hard to look at the mirror and say, hey, you know, am I really fucking on the side of black people, or am I really on the side of black people in the way that I can still maintain my own goddamn privilege? See, you know, that's a real fucking question. And I'm not even saying that Kincaid is looking at it like that. But the point is, when I mention that white liberals are not necessarily motherfucking as dedicated to this bullshit as they fucking claim, and that there's not enough of them to make a goddamn difference, well, he didn't want to hear that, you see. And then he brings up his family, which was totally unmotherfucking necessary. Wasn't connected to any goddamn thing. He did the same fucking thing that woman did that I'm talking about. It wasn't necessary. And then accused me of dirty pool. I didn't bring families into this. I didn't bring personalities into this. I wasn't talking about him, and I wasn't talking about his son. But see, that was done to shut me the fuck up. You know, the idea was, don't question me. Because if you listen to the show, it's like, oh, well, when I went out and did this, that means that it doesn't mean anything. And then he was reading in where people were coming in. So I got gas, so that doesn't mean anything. Nobody ever said that. Nobody ever said that. See, but the idea is, you think I'm supposed to kiss your ass now from now until the motherfucking end of time because you did that. And then when I tell you that, you're arrogant about it. But then you'll point to the arrogance of a Trump. There's no motherfucking difference. I don't owe you any goddamn thing. I don't owe any white person who did a fucking decent thing anything other than a fucking thank you. We don't owe you. You fucking owe us. Because everything you goddamn got is from us. You're standing on my goddamn land. You're only fucking free because my people fucking, you know, picked the goddamn cotton and fought the goddamn British for you. And then fought every goddamn enemy you ever fucking had. But see, you want to put all this shit on the Klan. No, it's not just the fucking Klan. The only reason that fucking Trump is where he's at is because when Hillary Clinton called us super predators, you white liberals didn't say any goddamn thing. When she was pushing mass incarceration, you didn't say anything. You were telling us to shut the fuck down and calm down and be quiet. And when Trump came around, you just told us to ignore him because nobody's listening to him. And now what? So the ball's in your court, white liberal. Whoever the fuck you are. If you're really down with us, then motherfucking prove it. And I'm not talking about anything goddamn extreme, and I'm not telling anybody to be John Brown, and anybody that says that I said that is a goddamn liar. But when you see somebody being fucking discriminated against, when you know that people are being marginalized, when you're being told to fire the black workers instead of the white workers, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? The next time you're there and the police officer is abusing somebody, what are you going to do? Are you going to turn your back? Are you going to fucking walk away? Or are you going to fucking get on your phone and say, I saw what the fuck you did. I saw what you did. You're out of fucking line. You're wrong. I saw what you did. And take the fucking risk that we take. And see if you really are down with this motherfucking movement or not. This is the Angry Indian. And you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
The best in indigenous chat radio for intelligent, politically aware aboriginals. Listen to Fourth World Radio, hosted by the Angry Indian, and broadcast by Aboriginal Press News Service, public radio over the World Wide Web, to the international indigenous community, and all ships at sea. Learn more at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com.
My beautiful kings and queens, it is Wednesday, April 8th, 2015. Hopefully you are out there or were out there this morning doing something productive, successful, something that is going to help establish your kingdom and queendom. Today, Sandy Speaks is going to focus directly on my white people. White people. Yes, black people know that all lives matter. But what I need you guys to understand is that being a black person in America is very, very hard. Although you all love to say, oh, nobody should see race, people are the reason that racism is still alive. Well, what kind of people are the reason? Black racists have no power, whereas white racists do. They have power because they are in positions of control, or they are in positions where they can influence the control over black people. Yes, that is very true. So to my friends who want to get on my videos and they're upset about the picture that I posted, oh well, I will not apologize for it, because at the moment, black lives matter. They matter. Our media is showing you, obviously they don't. So for y'all that can sit around and say all lives matter, I want you to go put it on a poster and stand out on a corner somewhere. If we can get enough white people to show that all lives matter, maybe they'll stop killing our black brothers. Because obviously that's what it's going to take for the white people to get up and get tired of black people saying black lives matter. So if y'all want it to stop, you get out there and do something about it. But what you're not going to do is get on my page with the foolishness. You will be deleted. You will be unfriended. I am not a racist. I grew up in Villa Park, Illinois, was the only black girl on an all-white cheerleading squad, so I had to learn how to deal with, and black people, you will not be successful in this world until you learn how to work with white people. But I want the white folks to really understand out there, black people are truly, we're doing as much as we can. Not all of us, but some of us are really doing as much as we can. And we can't help but get pissed off when we see situations where it's clear the black life didn't matter. For those of you questioning why was he running away, well, goddamn. Because in the news that we've seen as of late, you could stand there, surrender to the cops, and still be killed. So for those of you that feel like all lives matter, if you want to put it on the poster, I will stand out there with you. But if you're not ready to do that, do not get on my page with it. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. You might have a black friend or two. And I'm not calling all white people racist, because y'all not. But for the ones who want to get on my page talking about all lives matter, show me in American history where all lives have mattered. Show me where there has been liberty and justice for all, like that fucking Pledge of Allegiance we love to say. Excuse my French, because Sandy Speaks don't usually cuss. But I was really irritated by the responses to the post that I made earlier, because white people, if all lives mattered, would there need to be a hashtag for black lives mattering? Think about that. Just truly think about that. Yes, black on black crime numbers are extremely high. Yes, they are. But that is because there are uneducated people who are hell-bent on self-extermination. I am not one of them. I am into building up my kings and queens. So for me, black lives matter. And then subset, all lives matter. Take it or leave it. Sandy Speaks.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Roseanne Cash, for the American Association of Diabetes Educators.
Johnny Cash was my dad. For years he had diabetes but ignored it, even as his vision and health slipped away. Diabetes is serious. It can steal your sight, your limbs, even take you away from the people who love you. But it doesn't have to be this way. If you have diabetes, test and control your blood sugar regularly. You'll be healthier and you'll feel better too. To learn more, visit healthywithdiabetes.org.
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Would you like to hear the lie that judges tell jurors every day?
Listen up. This matters. I'm Lewis Black, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
In a criminal case, the judge instructs the jury, you decide the facts, but you jurors must apply to those facts the law as I explain it. And if the prosecution has proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then you must return a verdict of guilty. The problem with this instruction? It's not true. It's not true at all. And the judge well knows that, but most jurors don't. Jury nullification, the right of jurors to say no, to just say no to a prosecution, was central to the Bill of Rights. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson famously believed that jurors' right to nullify was central to democracy. Writing in the Champion magazine recently, criminal defense attorney Patrick Barone cautions that care must be taken when considering nullification because juries can use that authority to enhance and augment the power of the elite rather than to limit it. But, Barone continues, jury nullification can and should be a critical limitation on legislatures bent on promulgating and judges bent on enforcing ever more overreaching criminal laws. The take-home lesson here, criminal juries should know of their right to nullify because that power can constitute liberty's last defense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union because freedom can't defend itself.
Hello. This is a message to the so-called New Black Panther Party, which resides in the United States of America. As an American citizen, I ask that you all immediately disband and stop what you are doing, which is misrepresenting an organization and a culture that you do not understand. As the child of a Black Panther, I was raised to understand that the ideals of a Black Panther shall live on. However, the physical representation of a Black Panther can and will be oftentimes misrepresented and imitated. These gentlemen are Black Panthers, and they also have the original mindset of a Black Panther, which is to ensure truth, justice, and equality for every single tax-paying American citizen, regardless of the color of their skin or their ethnicity. God bless you, and power to the people.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
This video is a message to all the fake liberals and fake progressives out there. The next thing I would normally say here is, you know who you are. But chances are you don't. Chances are, if you're a fake liberal, you think I'm talking about someone else. You probably think of yourself to be the real McCoy. I aim to rectify that misunderstanding shortly. There was a time when I thought liberals were my allies. They spoke out against the wars, against the Patriot Act, the secret prisons, the tortures, the growing defense budget, and the blatant fascism when Bush was in office. And for 8 years, I listened to liberal talk show hosts and other so-called activists, believing them at face value. When Obama came along, I understood people's enthusiasm. He was saying all the right things, at least from that illusory view of the left. But when I started looking into who was funding him and backing him and began pointing this out to people, the response I got was less than receptive. No problem, I thought. If he's really a corporate puppet like the evidence indicates, then the left will wake up quickly and the push towards real change will continue. That's where I was dead wrong. You see, what I was about to discover is that being a liberal or conservative in America is much like being a member of a religion. And like the Catholic Church, which covers up the molestation of young boys committed by their priest, most conservatives and liberals are much more concerned about protecting their position than they are about the truth. This is the herd mentality. Self-identify with the herd, defend the leader of the herd regardless of what he does, acknowledge nothing that might damage the image of the herd, and above all, never step outside of the pack. If this means discarding all or most of the values that one had proclaimed just a few months prior, so be it. I had come to believe that values like standing against injustice, war, torture, assassinations, domestic spying, and corruption were liberal values. But I was wrong. These were just catchphrases, political mud pies to be thrown at the opposition. They were never real principles intended to stand above party alliances. In the beginning of the Obama presidency, I could excuse the lingering stars in the eyes, the lack of awareness of the early warning signs. A lot of people didn't even notice that Obama kept Bush's defense secretary Robert Gates, or that he named former Raytheon lobbyist William Lynn to be his deputy defense secretary. But now, with 4 years of warmongering and blatant corruption under his belt, his obscene bailouts of Wall Street, the top campaign contributor Goldman Sachs in particular, signing off on the largest defense budget in American history and therefore world history, the expanded drone program in multiple countries, the continued use of secret prisons and torture, and the continued use of executive orders to move America closer and closer to being an outright military dictatorship, at this point, those who defend Obama have no excuse anymore. I find it funny that when I point these things out, these fake liberals like to come back with what they think is a clever defense, which is essentially to point the finger at Bush and say that Bush started it. Bush started it? That's the best you can do? What I find even more funny is that they throw this in my face as if I would find it shocking or offensive. Never does it seem to cross their mind that they might just be talking to someone who actually cares about the morality of the issues regardless of which team did what. Never does it cross their mind that they might be speaking to someone who was speaking out against the wars during the Bush administration too, and who actually expected the same standards to be applied to the Obama administration. Never does it cross their mind that they might be talking to someone who doesn't buy into the left-right herd mentality. Obama supporters pointing the finger at Bush is about as valid as Stalin pointing the finger at Hitler saying that he started the mass murders first. That's not an exaggeration. These wars of aggression are mass murder. Here's the deal. If you don't actually care about the issues that you brought up during the Bush administration, if you just pretended to be anti-war when it was trendy and cool, if your moral compass swings as needed to protect the Democratic Party, then you are a fake liberal. You are no better than the idiots that still supported Bush at the end of his last term, and you deserve nothing but utter disdain. Obama's regime apologists are the new neocons. They've taken the religion of preemptive war, covert destabilization, and corporate fascism and given it a new paint job. But I got news for you. You're not fooling anybody but yourselves. So am I talking to you? If you're starting to feel angry and defensive right now, then yes, I'm talking to you. There's no point directing that anger towards me or anyone else. You have no one to blame but yourself for your hypocrisy. And there's no point trying to defend yourself either, because there is no defense. The only thing that you could possibly do to regain your credibility is to change your behavior. But what you need to realize is that if you don't change now, if you wait until Obama is out of office, then no one is going to take you seriously for the next 8 years of Republican rule that's going to follow. The next time you see one of these guys defending Obama, send them a link to this video. It's time to make these morons embarrassed to show their faces. Agree or disagree, leave your 2 cents in the comments. And if that's not enough, call us tonight, Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, and we can discuss any topic you'd like. Want more like this? Don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any videos, then follow us on Facebook and Twitter and my personal website, stormcloudsgathering.com, for bonus content.
Germany was having trouble, what a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around, and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy.
To a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Winter for Poland and France.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast, Some Rights Reserved.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000, you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's not on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Embassy in Dar es Salaam, Republic of Tanzania, East Africa. A demonstration is taking place by the revolutionary African students and university students against the U.S. policy in Vietnam. With me is Robert Franklin Williams, the president in exile of the New Republic of Africa, recently formed in the United States. Rob Williams is a U.S. citizen who left the United States in 1961, pursued by the FBI and the police of the state of North Carolina. He lived in Cuba from 1961 to 1966, broadcasting to the United States on his own radio program, Radio Free Dixie, and sending in copies of his monthly newsletter, The Crusader. Since 1966, he's been resident in Peking, China, where he has continued sending his newsletter, The Crusader, into the United States. Rob is considered one of the best-known leaders of the black nationalist movement. Rob, I notice you're wearing a button of the of Chairman Mao Zedong.
Yes, I got it in Peking because the Cultural Revolution is going on there, and that I'm being supported by the Chinese people, so nationally I would support the Chinese people in their Cultural Revolution.
Well, I'd like to start this interview. I think a lot of our viewers, people in the United States, many may be familiar with the circumstances under which Robert Franklin Williams left the United States in 1961. You were a fugitive at that time. You were under, there was a warrant out for your arrest for kidnapping in the state of North Carolina, and I believe also for interstate flight by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Could you tell us very briefly what led to those things? Do you think there was any base for the charges? And are they still pending against you?
Yeah, well, according to their concept, I was a fugitive. But according to my concept, I was a refugee from racial oppression. But this case grew out of the fact that I had for many years fought against racial tyranny in the South, that I had fought against racial segregation, racial discrimination, and racial dehumanization, and I became an enemy of the power structure. And because of this, I became also an object of hatred on the part of the local power structure, and the local power structure through manipulation, because a local Klan lawyer was also Kennedy's White House aide. They were able to manipulate Washington. And
so just 1 sec now. This happened in 1961 in August. At that time, you were head of the Union County branch of the NAACP.
Yes.
There were some freedom riders that had come to your city of Monroe.
Yes.
Right? And you had organized what you called a guard or self-defense force. What was this guard?
Yes, well, the freedom riders came for a different purpose. We had a standing guard there to defend the black community against white aggression. And this white aggression was primarily on the part of the Ku Klux Klan, backed up by the local racist police. The freedom riders came in to help assist in nonviolent demonstrations. These demonstrations were being conducted for the abolition of police brutality, the abolition of Jim Crow, of Jim Crow facilities, and we had a 10-point program wherein we had asked for fair employment. And
But you weren't, the Freedom Riders were nonviolent demonstrators.
Yes.
At this, you were not participating, though, in their demonstration, as I understand it, your guard, your people.
No, I refused to participate in these demonstrations on the grounds that I would not pledge myself to nonviolence, because I believed, and I've always believed, in self-defense. But I did ask the people, and they accepted reluctantly the idea that they would support these nonviolent demonstrations for a trial, because this was to be a trial to see if we had been in error with our self-defense policy, and to see if nonviolence really had the power of persuasion against these white terrorists.
Now, this guard, though, that you had consisted of about 200 or 300 people who were armed. You had set up foxholes, defense things, and so on. Were you advocating violence then, or was this strictly a self-defense thing for your black community?
Well, I advocated violent self-defense, because I don't think you can really have a defense against violent racist and against terrorists unless you're prepared to meet violence with violence. And my policy was to meet violence with violence.
Oh, would you say that your policy was to fire only when fired upon, or were you going to go out and attack people who you didn't like?
Well, it is commonly known that trenches and foxholes are fixed positions, and these are fixed positions of defense, and this is what we had. But the idea was to protect our communities, because law had broken down and the police had refused to protect us. So there was nothing else for men who had self-respect as men to do but to protect their families and their homes.
Now, in this situation of Klan violence, of you setting up foxholes and trenches and so on and arming your neighborhood, what specific event led to this charge against you of kidnapping?
Well, actually, in July and August, we had had some violent attacks on pacifist demonstrators. And on August the 28th, on Sunday afternoon, that the Klan had recruited or solicited support from as far away as Georgia, from Georgia and South Carolina, thousands of Klansmen, Minutemen and other fascist and racist poured into the city, and they had said that they were going to crush this demonstration and that they were going to destroy our branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and most of all that they were going to kill me and to destroy our branch of the NAACP. So we had an armed guard, and we had been arming people for quite a while throughout the community. So we prepared to defend ourselves. Also, the Klan had made forays and attacks into our community. They had stoned people. They had thrown missiles from cars, and had 14 women had been struck by these objects. And we were prepared to defend the community.
What specifically was the kidnapping charge based upon? What
the kidnapping charge was based upon the fact that some white racists who had been riding around and agitating, and they had had a banner on their car the previous day stating that this was open season on coons, that they had come into a community where many of the people had relatives who had been imprisoned and beaten openly on the streets of Monroe, and these people had come into this community, and these angry people who were about a half a block from my house had taken these people out of a car, and that they had brought them up the block in front of my house, and they had called for me to come out. When I came out, they were threatening to kill them, and these were not people who were members of our guard. These were groups of people roaming the streets who had become angry, and these were people who were not under the discipline of our guard. And so the fact was that I had to come out of the house, and these people were, some were screaming and crying to kill these people, that they were calling them white beasts, and that they were had been responsible for Ku Klux Klan activity, that they should be killed. And I knew that with the tension as high as it was, that they would have been killed. So the crowd was gradually closing in on them. I had to come out. I came down my steps off the porch into the yard, and I started to force the crowd away from them so that they would be arm's length away, because I knew if one person in that crowd struck out at them, that crowd was so angry it would have torn them apart. So,
now, just a minute. Now, you had not told anybody to take anyone out of the car. In fact, you didn't know what had happened until the crowd brought these people in front of your house.
No, well, this was a different crowd. The guard that we had, this guard was under orders, and this guard had been pulled back into a rear area waiting for a showdown with the main force of the Klan.
But you didn't tell anyone, or you didn't order anyone to take those two people out of their car?
No, there was no need to order anyone to take anyone out of a car. But first thing, we didn't have any facilities for taking anybody. Next thing, if there were enemies enough for any action to be taken, the idea was to use violence against them. But these people didn't use violence at this time. They only wanted to kill these people. And the only reason they didn't kill them was the fact that this woman, Mrs. Stegall, was in the car, because previous cars had passed through and they had been fired on. That I saw groups of men fire M1 rifles and 30 caliber rifles, Italian carbines, and they had tracer bullets, and I saw these bullets penetrating these cars. But in this case, because this woman was in this car, instead of firing on the car, that some of the people just took her out of the car and took this man out. And there was some question, some difference among the crowd as to what must be done.
But now, what did you have to do with
all
this?
I didn't have anything to do with it, because it occurred a half block from my house. And I was in the house at that time, taking care of telephone calls that were coming in from many parts of the county and all over the city of people who wanted to know what had happened to their children who were on the picket lines, and also of people volunteering to join the guard, and they wanted to come in to fight and make an all-out war and a showdown. But
now these two people were taken into your house, however.
No, they weren't taken into my house. When I came out into the yard, the woman, Mrs. Stegall, said that we have been kidnapped. And I said, well, here, lady, you're not kidnapped. You're free to leave anytime you get ready. And she said, well, if you will take us out, that we will be safe. These people will let us go if you will escort us out of this block. And I told her, no, lady, I'm not going to take you out of here, because I didn't bring you here, and I'm not going to take you out. And you're free to leave whenever you get ready.
Well, were you guilty of kidnapping? Did you physically kidnap or force these people to leave their car or enter your house?
They were taken out of the car by a group of people in the streets, and they followed me into my house. They had asked me to take them out of the community, and I refused to do it. So when I turned to go into the house to answer the telephone, they followed me.
Were they afraid? Is that why they followed you into the house?
Yes, they were afraid of the group of angry people, and these people were screaming that they should be killed, and I'm sure they would have killed them if they had stayed there.
So by following you into your house, they felt they'd be safer than out with the crowd. Now, did you make them stay in your house?
No, I didn't make them stay there. In fact, they wanted to stay because they had voluntarily followed me into the house, and they stayed there because they knew that that group in the streets, in the street, would have really killed them.
So you personally feel that the charge that you kidnapped anybody or caused them to be kidnapped is unjust. Is that your position?
Yeah, well, it's not that I feel that. I know that. I'm certain of this.
Now, so why is it that you then fled Monroe that night?
Well, the idea was to flee Monroe because there was no justice there, that I was leaving Monroe so that I wouldn't be in the community, because we thought it was going to be a big showdown and a lot of people would be killed, and they knew that I was going to be blamed for everything there. So the local people said that I should go away for a week or two until it was over and return.
Now, did you feel that your life was threatened? Is that why you left, or why?
Well, I felt my life was threatened, but that wasn't why I left. The idea was that I wouldn't be on the scene, and that they wouldn't be able to frame me, that anything that would happen, I wouldn't be held responsible, because it would be known that I was not in the community at the time.
Now, what happened to these two people that were in your house? Were they still there when you left, or had they been freed?
They were still there when I left, and according to the papers, when they left, they just left themselves, and they left free.
Were they harmed or what?
Well, according to the testimony of the people themselves, they were not harmed.
So, but you feel that this that was the charge against you, that you had caused them to, you and Mae Mallory and these other people had caused them to be taken out of their car and into your house, and this constituted kidnapping?
Well, this was their charge, but the fact is that none of the people who stopped them in the streets were indicted. That they only indicted the people they wanted to indict, and they weren't interested in any of the people. About 200 or 300 people stopped them, according to their own admission. But none of the people who were indicted were in the group that stopped them.
Now, who were the people who were indicted? Well, I mean, what type of people were they? Why were they indicted?
Well, one was a white freedom rider from New York, John Lowry. May Mallory was a housewife, a mother of two children, and two local fellows, Harold Reap and James Crowder. And these people were actually students. They were youth. And they were also youth leaders. So the idea was not to punish anybody for a kidnap, not to punish anybody who had stopped these people, but they had certain people they wanted to get rid of in the community.
Now, what has happened to the other people, the ones that stayed in the United States, who were indicted on that kidnapping charge?
Well, they are living normal lives in New York. That John Lowry is working in a bank, and I understand that he is now a junior bank official. May Mallory is working in a hospital and is traveling freely. In fact, she's just recently been here, and she was issued a passport to come here. That the other two youths are also living in New York, and the trial has not, since it was thrown out by the Supreme Court of North Carolina on the ground of racial discrimination and jury selection, it has not been recalled.
So in other words, the original charge against you, the people who were indicted, who were captured, their conviction was thrown out by the North Carolina State Supreme Court, and they are presently, what, under indictment or what?
Yes, the conviction was thrown out, but they were re-indicted. And this is more of a threat, a form of intimidation, than an active case, because they were re-indicted, but none of them have been picked up to be returned to the state of North Carolina.
So is it your feeling the state of North Carolina is not going to try to press this case?
Well, evidently not, because they didn't press it up until this time, and they seem to be only interested in me.
And this whole thing happened now more than 7 years ago.
Yes, more than 7 years ago.
So now, you fled, however. I heard that you were told that the sheriff was going to hang you, or your body was going to be in the town square or something, that they were directly threatening to kill you.
Yes, this was the chief of police, who said that in 30 minutes the state troopers were already coming to town, and that in 30 minutes I would be hanging up in the courthouse square.
Well, now, to make, I know it was a very complicated story, but in essence, you left Monroe, you got to New York and found out there was a federal warrant for your arrest for leaving the state of North Carolina.
Yes.
And you subsequently went to Canada as a fugitive.
Yes.
And then through a roundabout means through California and Mexico got to Cuba.
Yes.
Now, you were in Cuba from 1961 up until 1966.
Yes.
Well, why Cuba of all places? Why to a communist country so you could be accused of being a pro-communist propagandist instead of a real Afro-American freedom fighter just working for the equality of the American Negro people? I mean, why to Cuba?
I was given political asylum in Cuba. And I was there as an exile in Cuba, and I lived there as an exile.
Now, were there any particular Cuban leaders who gave you this asylum, or was it just, in general, the government there?
Well, actually, this political exile was given to me under the direct orders of Fidel Castro himself.
Why did he do this?
Well, he did this because, first thing, I had been a friend of Cuba. I had visited there on two occasions before, and the fact that the Cubans were convinced that under the racist laws in the United States, especially in the South, that it would be impossible for a black person to obtain justice. So they gave me this on the grounds that I couldn't get justice in a racist country.
Now, do you feel that the Cubans were using you to make propaganda against the United States?
No, I don't think they were deliberately using me, because there was some division in Cuba as to whether or not I should be allowed to enter there. And it so happened that Fidel himself took the position that I should be. And actually, he had to go against some of the party officials to reach this conclusion. So it wasn't a matter of just allowing me to be there on the grounds of propaganda.
Now, you say he had to go against some of the... You mean that the Communist Party of Cuba opposed your coming to Cuba?
Well, not the Communist Party as a whole, but some of the members in the party some of the other people in Cuba, and also those who had close connections with the U.S. Communist Party, because the U.S. Communist Party was opposed to my going to Cuba, and they tried to use their influence in Cuba to prevent my entrance into Cuba.
Why was the U.S. Communist Party, why do you feel they were opposed to you going to Cuba?
Well, the first thing was that I didn't belong to the U.S. Communist Party, and I was considered a black nationalist, and they opposed black nationalism. So they didn't want me in Cuba because they felt that they could no longer speak for the black people in America if they really had a genuine black person from the movement who had been in struggle. And this would have taken away some of their authority in Cuba. So they didn't want me there because they felt it would be a conflict between my black nationalism and their class theory.
Now, excuse me. Now, the arrival in Cuba, your arrival in Cuba, gave you certain facilities. That is to say, the Cuban government permitted you and helped you in publishing your newsletter, The Crusader, and also in making radio broadcasts to the United States on your radio station that was called Radio Free Dixie. Do you feel that giving you these facilities was more than just asylum, but in fact was helping you make propaganda for black nationalism?
Well, I said it was because the Cubans have made it plain that they support the liberation struggles of the peoples of the world, and they considered our struggle no exception. And the fact was that I had asked for this time and this program, and some of the party officials did not approve of it, and it was necessary for Fidel himself to intervene in this. And some of the party officials felt that I should be under the regular Cuban party propaganda. But Fidel Castro took the position that I was a freedom fighter from the United States, and that as a black American, that I knew more about what the propaganda should be than anybody. So his position was to leave him alone and to let him determine what he should do.
Now, while you were in Cuba, your wife, Mabel, and your two boys managed to get to Cuba from the United States, and they lived there with you.
Yes.
You had your own house there in Cuba, furnished
yes.
by the Cuban government. Now, did you ever feel that what you were doing was in any way act of treason or unpatriotism towards your country, towards the United States of America, or had you abandoned America? Did you feel you were now a Cuban, or what?
Now, I don't believe any man who lives in under tyranny in a government can ever be truthfully accused of treason. Treason can only come when a man is entitled to the rights and privileges and he is protected by his government, and then he betrays that government. Then he can be accused of treason. But when the government betrays its trust to its people, then the government is what is guilty, is the guilty party to treason. And I consider the government of the United States to have failed the black people in America in protecting the rights of black people in the enforcement of the Constitution. So it wasn't a matter of treason, but it was a matter of constitutional betrayal on the part of the United States of America, on the part of the government and the so-called decent people in America.
This is a Crusader. This was your monthly newsletter from Cuba. It's the issue of May, June 64. I mean, there's a cartoon here. Afro-American Revolt, the Racist USA, the Torch of Retribution. And we see what appears to be an Afro-American lighting fire to buildings. Now, if you were going to put out something of this kind, don't you think that it would have been better to do it in a neutral country so that people couldn't say, well, this is just anti-U.S. communist propaganda coming from Cuba, that you've been a tool of the Cubans?
Neutral country? As far as the black man is concerned, there's no such thing as a neutral country in the world. Either a country is for justice, either a country is for the liberation of the oppressed, or that it is against it. That there's no such thing as neutrality under justice. That either you've got to be for justice or against it. Now, as a black man in America, I went to the countries that would accept me. Now, since I've been in Cuba and China, I've tried to go to France, I've tried to go to Sweden. I expected Sweden to be a neutral country. I expected France to be a neutral country, but I discovered that they're not neutral, that they're with the United States government. I was in Canada. I had hoped to stay in Canada. I had been there for a month. But then I discovered that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police had entered the search for me, and that the response of the United States government was seeking to return me to the racist United States.
But even though the Royal Canadian Mounted Police had entered the search for you, and later on you couldn't get into France and Sweden and places like that, why did you feel it necessary to send out something that was that is so obviously inflammatory and an agitational pamphlet? Didn't you realize that by it coming from Cuba, even though you were publishing it yourself, that people in the United States would say this is just anti-U.S. communist propaganda? They wouldn't read what was in it.
But it makes no difference what the people in the United States say. If they were concerned with justice, they would be speaking out against the racial injustice there, and it wouldn't be necessary to publish such publications as this. The fact is that I belong to an oppressed group, an oppressed class, an oppressed race, and it is my duty to agitate for the liberation of these people, for the freedom of our people, no matter what the enemy may say, no matter what impression I may give. Now, Cuba was a place that I could freely work, and a person who is truly interested in justice must work from wherever he can. So I worked from Cuba.
So you do not feel that your publications in any way caused the Watts or Detroit or Newark riots?
No, I feel that Washington and the American people, the apathy of the American people, at least those in the power structure, actually responsible for these riots. No, that I'm a victim of those same conditions. So it is the duty that I'm duty bound to oppose this any way that I can, by any means necessary, and to advocate a policy of elimination of these conditions. And I don't care what the cost is or what method I must use. And I'm happy to know if this method is proven successful, then I'm happy. I feel happy about it that I am accomplishing my objective.
Well, getting back to Cuba, what were conditions like for you in Cuba? You had a long interview with Che Guevara before he left Cuba, just shortly before he vanished. Why did you leave Cuba? There have been stories that you felt threatened in Cuba, that you had serious problems after being in Cuba almost 5 years. Why did you leave there? What was your situation? What did Guevara have to say to you, and why did you leave?
Well, I didn't feel threatened in Cuba. The fact was that I wasn't being as effective in Cuba as I had been, as I felt that I could be. The fact was that the Cuban government, or some faction in the government, had started to sabotage my work, and I discovered that they weren't really interested in the elimination of these oppressive conditions in the United States, that they wanted to create an image as revolutionaries, but they didn't want to do anything. They didn't want me to do anything, that they just wanted to support me there, or pretend to support me, without really taking any concrete steps. And they did everything they could to keep me from promoting black nationalism and an effective struggle for our people. So I left.
Yeah, but they did give you radio broadcast facilities and facilities for publishing and getting, what, about 40,000 of these things a month into the States. How were they sabotaging you?
Yeah, well, in the beginning they had helped me, but actually it wasn't the government that started to print these publications. Actually, the Cuban workers, the printers, agreed to do this, and these publications were being printed before the government even realized it. And they were even being sent into the States. But then after the government realized it, the government did start to support this, because they saw it as a good propaganda thing. But the thing about it is the government tried more and more to patch up some differences with the United States government. More and more they started putting pressure on me. They started sabotaging. Now, they wouldn't sabotage my life there. They supported me up until the end as an individual, but they didn't want to do anything that would arouse the antagonism of the United States government.
Now, just a minute. You say that the Cuban government was trying not to antagonize the U.S. government? Why was that?
Yes, they were trying not to do this. Evidently, they were trying to reach some agreement on the exiles in the United States, the Cuban exiles. And
you mean to keep the exiles from attacking Cuba, they would stop you from attacking the United States?
That's what actually the United States government had already started intervening, and they had started restraining the Cuban exiles in the United States. So I suppose it's just my assumption. I don't have any concrete evidence, but I assume that this was reciprocal and that the Cuban government also started restraining me.
Well, what about your relationships with Che Guevara? Did he sponsor you? In other words, were you doing what he thought should be done, like starting one too many Vietnams, whatever his slogan was?
Well, I had had a long discussion with Che on the eve before his disappearance, and he had said that they had some differences in the government. He had said that he differed with them, and he thought that I should receive more support from the Cuban government, and that the Afro-Americans in the United States should receive more support.
Now, what was his difference with the other people in the Cuban government?
Well, according to what he had stated, was the difference in the revolutionary belief, the fact that he believed in a revolution. He believed that Cuba should support the revolutionary movements, and that more and more the Cuban government was not supporting the revolutionary movements. So this was his difference, basically.
Now, when you say support the revolutionary movements, do you consider the movement for equality for American Negroes to be a revolutionary movement?
Yes, well, it's developing into a revolutionary movement, and the fact was that we could see this potential. And everybody knows that that there can be no political freedom or economic freedom for the black people in America without revolutionary conditions or without revolutionary activity.
Well, now here, in your Crusader newsletter, you started out with this letterhead, this man, medieval crusader on horseback. However, you've changed it in the last couple of years to the machine gun and the torch. Now, I get the impression from this, and many people do, that when you say revolution, you mean violence, you mean arson, you mean destruction. You just don't mean a change in the American way of life.
Well, this change took place because of changing times. That when I first started with the Crusader Man on Horse, those were different conditions. That they were the conditions of people who believed in Gandhi, people who believed in Christianity. And these boycotts and demonstrations were led by a lot of church people.
Martin Luther King and so on.
Yes. And so we believed in that. But this is a matter of evolution, that I didn't decide to change this masthead myself. But many people wrote in, many of the black people in the black communities who were distributing this, and they said that they didn't think this was an appropriate symbol for the new movement, for the new mood. And so this is why we adapted this new mask head with the machine gun and the torch.
Yeah, and this was, but you changed this after what? That is to say, after 1965 was when you changed.
Yes, because this was the new era of the bullet, of the fire and the bullet. So it was time to change. This was no longer just a religious or philosophical crusade, but this was a new era that had entered the stage of history.
Now, when you say new era, you mean that you arbitrarily decided that the bullet and the arsonist torch, the Molotov cocktail, that this was going to be the way you were going to express yourself?
No, the people in the streets decided this. And they wrote to me, and they suggested, and some even demanded, that I get in step with this new tendency, because it had come, and they knew that I was with it, but they didn't think that this was giving the right image, this masthead, so I changed it.
Now, when you left Cuba, was there any particular incident that forced you to leave Cuba? Were there any particular individuals who forced you to leave Cuba?
There were many incidents and some certain individuals, because the Cuban people always supported me, the revolutionaries supported me, the military men supported me, but there were a few people, a few leaders around Fidel, like Comandante Vallejo, Comandante Piñera, and Osmanes and Fuegos. These people had tried to sabotage the Afro-American struggle, and they were pretending to be party people and pretending to be great leftists and Marxists and this, but all the time they were sabotaging what I was doing and doing everything to make my struggle ineffective and my stay uncomfortable in Cuba.
Now, when you say sabotaging, there has to be a reason for this. If you think they were trying to sabotage your work, your radio broadcast, your publishing of your newsletter, why do you think they were doing this?
I think they were doing it because there had been some infiltration into the Cuban intelligence, and Piñera was also one of the intelligence officials, and he was either being misled, being fed misinformation. He was working directly for the United States and for the CIA.
You think that, the CIA was that deep into the Cuban government that they could surround the people, touch the people surrounding Fidel and actually stop what you were doing when he wanted it done?
Well, I don't think that. I know that because I had close contact with them and I know what they were able to do.
I mean, do you think the CIA did this or was it someone else? Do you think maybe the Russians did it?
Well, it appears that the CIA did it because all that was done was pro-American, and it would have benefited America more than anybody else or any other country. But it could be that it was a joint operation, or it could have been some other country. But I know that it was done because I was the victim of it.
So their specific actions caused you to believe that you must, that you had to leave Cuba.
Well, if I wanted to carry on my struggle for the liberation of the black people in America, if I could live true to what I believed, I had to leave Cuba. But I wasn't forced out of Cuba. That I had a choice of remaining there. But I could have remained in Cuba as a socialist Uncle Tom. But I didn't see any difference in being a socialist Uncle Tom than in being an Uncle Tom in capitalist and racist America. And I'm not cut out to be an Uncle Tom, no matter who is for.
Now, why did you go to China, to the mainland of China, what we call communist China in the States? Why didn't you go to a neutral country at this time?
Well, I had tried to go to Sweden. I tried to go to Sweden from Cuba. I tried to go to Canada. I applied for a visa. I applied to immigration, the Canadian immigration. I filled out a form, and they rejected me. There was no place else to go but China. So the Chinese people and the Chinese government received me with open arms, and I'm grateful to them for this. And I would also always be grateful to them. But where else could a black freedom fighter go in the world but to the People's Republic of China?
Now, when you arrived in China, this was in 1966, did the Chinese offer you facilities, such as propaganda facilities, broadcast facilities, newspaper facilities? In other words, were you able to keep putting out the things that you've been doing in Cuba?
Yes, that I had the opportunity to do what I was doing in Cuba and more. That the Chinese only stated that they supported me and they supported the black people in America, and that I should ask them what I wanted to do, should tell them. And if I had any special requests, all I had to do was to make these requests. And this was the position of the Chinese government. This was the position of the Chinese people, that they didn't take any active part in this, but they left it up to me as a matter of principle, the principle that they support revolutionary people and struggling peoples in the world.
Now, are you working for the communist Chinese government? Are you their agent or a spokesman for them today?
No, I've never been a spokesman, I've never been an agent, and I've never been on their payroll. I live in China as an exile. They have given me political asylum as an exile. They support my struggle. They never dictate any policy to me, and my propaganda is completely divorced from theirs. And anybody who studies the situation closely can see that there is some difference in my propaganda and Chinese propaganda. And the Chinese allow me to produce my propaganda without interference. And they have never asked me to change my way of thinking. They've never tried to pressure me into making any decision that I didn't want to make.
Yet you wear a Mao Zedong button. This would indicate that you have accepted the philosophy of Chairman Mao and that you are a supporter of it.
Yes, that I believe that he has done a lot of good for China, that he's brought the Chinese people a great distance in a short length of time. He is one of the great leaders of history, and that Chairman Mao means more to more than just means something to more than just communists in the world. That he is also a defender of the rights of the poor, of the oppressed.
Now, do you mean by that that Afro-Americans, that American Negroes, should follow the teachings of Mao Zedong?
Yes, they should follow the teachings. Now, because of the fact that Chairman Mao says himself that in every situation that the people must determine what they can use and what they can't use, and that nothing should be forced from the outside. that the people in their respective communities must decide and must fashion the methods that they use. So I suggest that from his own teachings that they follow this. This means that any struggle in the United States need not necessarily be following the blueprint of the Chinese Revolution, even the Chinese philosophy.
Yeah, but don't you realize that by wearing a Mao Zedong pin and by saying that Afro-Americans should follow the teachings of Chairman Mao, that you in fact substantiate the claims by people in the United States that the uprisings, that the burnings of American cities are fomented, organized, and supported by the Red Chinese?
I've learned long ago not to be too much influenced and concerned with what people say, especially in a negative way, in this negative vein. There are many people in the United States who say that I'm a kidnapper, but I've never kidnapped anybody. There are some people who say I'm a criminal, but I've never committed any criminal act. So I can't be concerned. Look, I'm a refugee. I'm a victim of all kinds of racial oppression, tyranny, and terror in the United States. So why should I be concerned with what they think about me or what they call me? My first concern is liberation. My first concern is justice and freedom. And it makes no difference what they call me. It makes no difference what they think, because in the final analysis, they are going to have to face reality. And the reality is that America is not God, America is not the end of the earth, and it doesn't matter what the Americans think. In the final analysis, the truth will come out, and they're going to have to face it, no matter what it is.
Now, just a minute. Are you admitting or are you acknowledging that the Red Chinese are supporting, fomenting riots in American cities and maybe even sending in arms and money to people to destroy America?
The Chinese, as far as I know, and I think I'm closer to them than any other American, and I've never known them to send in any money nor arms to America. That the Chinese support the Afro-Americans morally, and the Chinese have asked what the Afro-Americans want.
Now, this is a pamphlet that you wrote in China. It's called Listen, Brother, by Robert F. Williams, and is directed at American GIs, at Afro-American GIs fighting in Vietnam. Now, you've used things in it like photographs from American cities, of rioting, of fighting between police and civilians, and also photos which are quite terrible of some of the corpses from, let's say, this one is from the Newark rioting, a man shot 17 times by the police. And you have statements in here referring to black and white Americans saying, both of us together can't beat the Viet Cong. The man, meaning white America, wouldn't have a possible chance with us against him, too.
Well,
what do you mean by this?
First thing, this pamphlet was written in Peking, but it was printed in New York, the United States of America. Next thing is, those pictures are in there. Yes, they're on display. But I didn't commit those crimes. The black people in America didn't commit those crimes. Those crimes were committed by white America and by white America's running dog cops who murdered innocent people on the streets of America. And if these pictures are so horrible, then how much more horrible and terrifying are the actual acts are visited against our people?
But you're asking here for American soldiers to commit treason, to actually turn and fight against their own country.
I'm not asking them to commit treason. I'm asking them to stop betraying humanity. I'm asking them not to commit treason against humanity. Man's first duty is to his brother. Man's first duty is to humanity, not to governments, not to brutal, savage governments and oppressors. This was what the German soldiers said. The German soldiers were obeying the Third Reich, the government of Hitler. So this is no excuse, this thing about treason, to threaten people with treason because they refuse to be brutes, because they refuse to resort to the methods of tyranny. No. This is not asking treason. This is asking humanity.
But wait a minute. You're not only asking people not to fight the Viet Cong, you're asking them to take up arms against the U.S. government, to destroy the U.S. government. That's more than just not being involved in brutal acts. You're asking them to commit brutality against their fellow Americans.
That's asking to put an end to tyranny, just like in the colonies of the United States. when Britain was visiting tyranny on the colonies. It was not enough just not to serve the crown, but the idea was to stop the crown from oppressing others, to eliminate tyranny from the soil of the colonies. And this is what is being requested here. It's not enough for an Afro-American not to kill Vietnamese, but it is his duty to prevent this war machine from crushing his own people, from crushing his people in the streets of racist America. And the idea is that the black man, if he's going to fight, if he's going to be a soldier, he should fight for the liberation of his own people. He's got no business in Vietnam. And the idea is that he is fighting for his own enemy, for the rights of his enemy to oppress others, to destroy others. But he is not fighting for his right to live as a human being or his mother in the United States of America. And what I'm saying is, if they force him into battle, if they force him to kill, then the person, the people he should kill are those who are oppressing him. And those are the white Americans of the United States.
Now, wait, now you say all white Americans, everybody with light skin, should be killed? What are you saying?
No, I'm not saying that all white Americans should be killed. But I'm saying that those who are killing and murdering Vietnamese in cold blood, the same as they're murdering and killing black people in the streets of Washington, in the streets of Detroit, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, I'm saying that they deserve to be killed by black soldiers who have gone to kill others in their name and on their behalf.
Now, but what you're saying, if people listen to what you say and try to do what you say, this will result in the death of millions of people. This will result in the death of most black Americans.
You mean it will result in the death of white people in America? Because our people have been being killed in America with impunity for almost 400 years. We've lost millions of people. In fact, Lord Bertrand Russell has said that more Afro-Americans have been exterminated in the United States than Hitler exterminated Jews in Germany. So when you start talking about losing millions of people, you're not talking about black people. You're talking about white people. And if white people insist on murdering our people and practicing genocide against our people, then they have a right to be murdered. And this becomes our duty to end this.
Yeah, but now, don't you think that being out of the United States for almost 8 years now, that you're a little out of touch with what's been happening? There have been great strides made in civil rights. There have been many bills passed. The work of late Reverend King was essential in these things. And white Americans are trying very hard to try to do something about this situation. There's no genocide being committed. There are no concentration camps or gas chambers. You've been involved in this great cultural revolution in China. Perhaps this has gotten you a little out of touch with the United States today, because I'm sure that there are a great many white Americans that think that what you're saying now is way out.
Out of touch? Is it way out that Reverend King is dead? Who killed Reverend King? Reverend King is dead, so I'm out of touch with reality. It appears to me that conditions have worsened. It appears to me that I'm behind time, that I'm too moderate in the view of this, because here is a pacifist, one of the great followers of Gandhi, a man who advocated love and nonviolence, has been shot down in the streets of racist America and killed like a common street dog. Now, and then I'm supposed to be moderate in my outlook. I'm supposed to be merciful. This is asking more of me as a victim than has been asked of the oppressor.
Well, but you're calling for an attack on hundreds of millions of people based upon the act of one man.
But not a matter of an act of one man. That mankind is responsible for his fellow man. That society is a collective. Is a collective community, and you cannot be aloof in a community where you live. The German people allowed Hitler to lead them down the drain. They allowed Hitler to rage and to act like a maniac, and they didn't take any position whatever. They supported Germany. They supported their government. And as a result of this, we can see what happened. Now, the American people can't hide behind the excuse that they are not doing it, that they are not committing these crimes. But they are actually responsible for these crimes, because these crimes are being committed in the name of the American people by a government that states it is a government of the people, for the people, and by the people.
The American government didn't kill Reverend King, or for that matter, Robert Kennedy or President Kennedy.
But it tolerated the death of Martin Luther King. It didn't prevent the death of Martin Luther King. And the 14th Amendment says that every citizen is equal, is entitled to equal protection under law. Now, the J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI says that they know every time some conspiracy is being formulated in the ghetto. They know about plots they claim against leaders like Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young. They know when the statues are going to be blowing up. They know when people are planning to set off bombs. But they didn't know when the President of the United States was about to be killed. They didn't know when Martin Luther King was about to be killed. They didn't know when Bobby Kennedy was about to be killed. Now, what is all of this about? All of this good protection and know-how and protection of people like Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young and these people, and no protection of the Kennedys and the Kings.
Well, do you think that but the Kennedys aren't Afro-Americans? They're white Americans.
Yeah, they are white Americans, but they have run afoul of the rightist forces in the United States, the same as Reverend King.
Well, then aren't your enemies certain forces in the United States and not white society as a whole?
There are certain forces in the United States, but the fact is that when you have a community that is becoming degenerate, and that is being overrun by degenerates, and that degeneracy is becoming an order of the day, then no honest man can take an inactive position. No honest man can be neutral. And if honest men are neutral, then they are not neutral, and they are not honest, but they become accessories after the fact and after the act and to the act.
All right, now, you have been in China. You have been given honors and position that no American citizen, practically no private person in the world has ever had. For example, you have been allowed to stand next to Chairman Mao on the Gate of Heavenly Peace, the Capitol building in Peking, and actually take the microphone and speak to 2.5 million people. Why do you think that you as an individual, you, Robert Franklin Williams, have been given these honors and this position, this incredible support, at least moral support, if you claim no arms, by the communist government in China?
Because I'm the first black victim of racial oppression and tyranny to have been able to escape this network of tyrants. The first one to land on a friendly soil, or to land on soil where they are opposed to this type of tyranny. So it is only natural that the Chinese people would want to hear what I've got to say. Not only do they want to hear what I've got to say, but they think others in the world who are victims and potential victims of the same injustice, the racist oppression and injustice, that the people who are potentially targets of this should know the nature, the true nature of America.
Now, in China, and I realize it's impossible to discuss this in a short period of time, this would take hours, but in China, you've been living through this great cultural revolution that they're calling, which is in many ways torn Chinese society apart. People in the States don't know much about this. What's going on in China? What are the forces involved? What is this cultural revolution? Can you just say it very simply?
Well, it will actually be impossible for the people in the United States to understand the cultural revolution in China or anything about China, because they don't have enough background to understand what's going on. But actually, basically, what has taken place is that the Chinese youth and the Chinese workers and peasants and soldiers, under the direction and teaching of Chairman Mao, are trying to develop a new society that will mold a new kind of man, a new kind of individual, the type of individual that the Christians claimed they wanted to produce many years ago. And that is that there will be men who will be honest, men who will be devoid of ego, men who will work for the collective good of all, men who will not put their selfish motives ahead of those of their fellow men. And this is basically is what they're trying to do, the objective. Now, there's nothing that says that they are going to succeed. There's no certainty of this. In fact, Mao Zedong himself has said that there's a possibility that they may lose, but this is what they're trying to do. And they're having much trouble and friction because there are some who support socialism, some who support communism, some who support Mao Zedong, but who don't think that they can overcome this feeling of personal gain, that they can overcome ego. And some people are opposed to this because it requires a great deal. You must try to imagine what it requires of a person to think more of humanity, to think more of the people in his community than of himself and his own immediate family.
You mean they're trying to create a society where people won't work to get more pay or won't work to get bonuses? In other words, the whole direction that Russia is going in, this Liebermanism and things like that, is to let workers participate in factory profits. Are you saying that the Chinese are trying to motivate people just by idealism? That certainly would cause a conflict.
Well, as are the people themselves. You see, this is the strange thing about it. It's not the government trying to force the people to accept this philosophy, but many of the people, and especially the peasants themselves and soldiers, are saying that this must be done. This is the type of society they want, and that they are actually striving to produce a type of personality wherein the man's satisfaction for his work will come from the satisfaction of creating for the good of all, for the good of humanity. That he will derive his compensation from the fact that he knows that he is contributing to humanity.
What do you see for the United States? You're an American. You still say you're an American citizen. What do you think is going to happen there, in the States?
Well, I think great turmoil is going to take place there. And what we've seen today is just a sample of what is developing in the world, a new attitude that there's much contempt and much hatred for America because of its imperialist attitude, because of its capitalist attitude in dealing with others, because of its racist attitude. And people in the world are beginning to get tired of this. And more they're beginning to complain. And more they're beginning to see the United States as the devil power of the earth. And not only the people outside, but our people inside, the black people, are beginning to see America as serving serving as the devil to make life miserable for the good people of the world, or the struggling peoples. So I can foresee the day when, unless America changes, and unless it changes soon, it is going to be completely destroyed. It's going to be wiped off the first face of the earth, because it is impossible for a nation to serve the devil and to do such evil to others and exist. And it was Abraham Lincoln himself who said that a nation divided among itself cannot stand, and America is divided.
Now, but when you say wiped off the face of the earth, there's no power on earth that will dare to attack us. Or we can destroy Russia or China or anybody else who tries this. What are you talking about when you say wiped off the face of the earth?
Well, when I say wiped off the face of the earth, I mean that part of it is going to come from within America. America's already about to destroy itself. America now is in such a sorry state that even the President of the United States is not safe, unless he's a rightist, that a man who was Attorney General and a man who was an aspirant for the presidency can be killed openly in the streets.
But that's not the destruction of the United States.
No, but this is the beginning. This shows that there's something seriously wrong, and this shows that the society is becoming so degenerate and so many explosions are taking place among the people that it can't possibly stand, plus the fact it's suffering defeat in Vietnam, and more that the peoples of the world are beginning to resist, and they're going to resist more. And all of these forces brought together, including the degeneracy inside the country, is going to bring about its destruction. That's all it is to it.
Yeah, but you're talking the abstract here. In your newsletter, in your radio broadcast in the past, and in many statements that you've made, you've been quite specific. You've said that Afro-Americans are going to blow up American factories, dynamite Hoover Dam, destroy the railroad lines, destroy electrical power lines. You tell how to make Molotov cocktails, how to attack the police. Aren't you, in fact, advocating, preaching that Afro-Americans should try to destroy American industry and bring chaos to American cities?
I'm preaching for my people the same thing that George Washington and Patrick Henry preached for their people in another time, in another day. That I'm preaching that we must use any means necessary in order to liberate ourselves, and that we have no right to submit to tyranny. I'm saying that we must become men, and we must resist, and we must use any means, no matter what it requires. And the fact that I'm more concerned with the liberation of people, I'm more concerned with human with humanity and the human flesh than with buildings, than with the loss of property. You see, this is the cold capitalist version of the fact that we must save the property, but I'm interested in saving the people, and black people have a right to be saved as much as anybody. And unless white America is willing to liberate the black people and to stop oppressing us, then if America must go up in smoke, then let it go, let it go, let it burn.
Have you witnessed anything like this?
Mate, I've told you before, this is for real women.
Is there a problem here?
No matter how subtle...
So who is it this week, a guy or a girl? Haven't you made your mind up yet?
They are all forms of sexually based harassment.
Sarah, get that thing off your neck. We don't all need to hear about it.
Anybody can report this behaviour.
And there are laws to protect you.
Do something about it.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop. Really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Free Leonard. It is mind-blowing for us to be here now at this late hour with Leonard Peltier still in chains. Books have been written, documentaries have been produced, congressmen have joined his freedom campaign, all for naught. For Leonard Peltier, a former leader of the American Indian Movement, AIM, is still not free. That, to anyone with a soul, is a damn shame. Many Peltier supporters put their trust in a politician named Bill Clinton, who told them that when he got elected, he wouldn't forget about the Native American leader. Their trust, like those of so many others, was betrayed once Clinton gained the office and the FBI protested. In the waning days of his presidency, he issued pardons to folks like Mark Rich and other wealthy campaign contributors. Leonard Peltier was left in his chains. I won't restate the obvious. Leonard's innocence, the blatantly unfair trial, the crooked tricks that led to his extradition. Others may do that. What is needed is more support, not from two-faced politicians, but from the people, the many, who, like me and you, know injustice when we see it. Join the movement to free Leonard, Gwath Ilas, or he who leads the people. Build it. For only a mass movement can bring freedom. Thank you. On the move, long live John Africa. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
This ends our news flash.
Media spokespeople and politicians in both parties are working overtime to paint imaginary connections between the broad movement supported by millions of Americans to strip police of their traditional immunity and impunity for violent acts committed against civilians on the one hand, and the deranged, disconnected shooters of police in Texas and Louisiana on the other hand. The real links they studiously ignore are that the Dallas and Baton Rouge shooters were both veterans of the unjust and murderous U.S. military occupations of Afghanistan and or Iraq, as are many of the police who commit violent acts against their fellow Americans after they return home. While the percentage of cops with military backgrounds is unclear, partially due to the existence of special laws protecting police personnel, disciplinary, and other records from prosecutorial and public scrutiny, the percentage of military veterans among police around the country is probably higher than in any other line of work, excepting civilian employees of the Pentagon, intelligence services, and their contractors. The U.S. military is widely known to aggressively discourage soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines from admitting to or seeking help for psychological disorders and injuries. The world our military members live in is a brutal and twisted place where 2 out of 5 women are sexually assaulted. It's a world where reporting, not committing such an assault, is a career ender. A world where seeking help for psychological problems can impair your security clearance and job prospects years later in civilian life, because military medical and psychological records, unlike those of civilians, are not confidential. Indications are that the Baton Rouge and Dallas shooters both had problems, which are likely results of their military experience. By the same token, it's not implausible to imagine that many violent and abusive former military members were in need of psychological help even before they became law enforcement officers. For too long, Americans have hidden from the facts and the consequences of America's brutal overseas wars, even while making motion picture heroes of white snipers like Chris Kyle, who famously claimed to have been paid to shoot 30 so-called looters in New Orleans during the Katrina disaster. In Chicago, the famous police torturer John Burge first learned his trade in the Vietnam War's Phoenix program. A generation later, Burge's successors in the Chicago Police Department have been directly linked to the mistreatment of prisoners at Guantanamo. Rank-and-file U.S. torturers at Abu Ghraib were Pennsylvania prison guards in civilian life. While malicious authoritarians, from Hillary Clinton and Wolf Blitzer on the one hand to Bill O'Reilly and Rudy Giuliani on the other, want to sell us their fantasies connecting Black Lives Matter and the shootings of police, they ignore the all-too-real blowback on American streets from our nation's global empire and its permanent war footing. It's not fantasy but fact that U.S. Special Ops troops are currently active in dozens of countries across Africa and Asia and in the Ukraine on the very borders of Russia, doing bloody, brutal, and unspeakable things the American people don't endorse and did not vote for. Their crimes go unacknowledged and unpunished, and their psychological injuries untreated. The U.S. military, stationed at the frontiers of U.S. empire in more than 100 countries around the world, are incubating the next waves of brutal and abusive police, along with their disconnected and deranged shooters, all practicing what they never should have been taught in the first place. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.